It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech. Yes, I'm all decked out because this is our annual holiday special this year. We thought we'd gather the our hosts together, Jason Howell, Micah Sargent, Ant Pruitt, to talk about the big stories of 2021 and some silly little stories, too. The best of 2021, live next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 855 for Sunday, December 26th, 2021. Our holiday special, Smitten by 2021. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Blue Land. Single-use plastic is so year 2000. The thing is, it's 2022, almost, which means it's way past time to make cleaning fun, beautiful, and plastic-free. Right now, you get 20% off your first order when you go to blueland.com/twit. And by Noom, you don't need rules to lose weight, just the knowledge and wisdom to empower you to build smarter, more sustainable habits. Start building better habits for healthier long-term results. Sign up for your trial at Noom.com/twit. And by UserWay.org. UserWay ensures your website is accessible, ADA compliant, and helps your business avoid accessibility-related lawsuits. The perfect way to showcase your brand's commitment to millions of people with disabilities. It's not only the right thing to do, it's also the law. Go to userway.org/twit for 30% off UserWay's AI-powered accessibility solution. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech, our special, can you hear it? End of the year, holiday edition. It's Boxing Day. I'm Leo Laporte. And, you know, it's kind of, as you know, it's been kind of a tough year. And in years past, we've flown in hosts from all over the world. We've had celebrities like Judge John Hodgman, Jonathan Colton, you know. But this year, it's just going to be us. And I think that's kind of fun. The hosts on today's TWiT end of year special, Ant Pruitt from Hands-On Photography. And he's pouring a good, because you didn't have any holiday festive cheer around. I thought a little something brown might be good. Might be good to go down.
Yellowstone bourbon, sir.
Ooh, Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. From the national park or the TV show?
No. Not quite the national park.
Okay.
So the TV show. All right.
That is Jason Howell of All About Android Tech News Weekly. Hi, Jason.
Hello, it's good to be here. I wish I had remembered that liquor could be a part of this.
It can be.
All the way downstairs. Well, it can be. The problem is I'm in the corner of my bedroom behind this desk that requires me to basically do like a Ninja Warrior course in order to get out of this.
Right.
So
send the carrier pigeons.
We were really hoping to have you all in studio. In fact, when we planned this, we thought we would be able to. And then right. Omicron, the least favorite Greek letter. Also with us, Micah Sargent from his home. Hey, Micah.
Hello. My least favorite Greek letter is, what is it? Canoe.
That's it. No, there's no Greek letter canoe. What are you talking about?
What is
about?
It? There's
you like, want me to do this? I'm going to do this
yes.
Because I spent misspent youth learning the Greek alphabet. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta. You just stop me when you hear the worst one. Zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu. Now, I pronounce it xi, but...
That's xi. I don't like xi.
I don't. Nobody xi. Does. Although my friend who is in a fraternity says, oh, no, that's she. Anyway, oh. Xi. Now, I got to do it fast. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu, xi, omicron, phi, keep, xi, omega. No, I've lost track.
Wait, there's
I skipped a whole chunk in the middle.
I think it's
omicron.
That one I like.
Phi, I like... Key, C omega. Now I've something new omicron. Something new omicron. Anyway,
it's the PSI one. Or however,
C. C.
That's
the one I
don't
oh no, that's at the
C.
End. C. There's C. C XI. C. And PSI. Actually, none of that's real because it's, the Greek alphabet is not a Roman alphabet, so I don't know what it is. P. I forgot P. P.
So
Rho
in other
Sigma
words, we shouldn't
tau,
trust you.
Upsilon. Phi keep C omega. Pardon me?
Yeah, I was convinced that you knew these.
Canoe, though, is the new one, and we're going to add that. Alpha, beta, gamma, canoe. I don't know, canoe. Anyway, good. Thank you guys for sharing this time with me. We are recording this a little early, of course, because you all be busy. Jason, you have little kids, lol kids, who still think Christmas is a great holiday.
Yeah, they're still convinced. I won't say that very loud because they're on the other side of the door.
It's gonna be so
you might
much
actually
fun.
Hear them throughout the recording of this episode because they're
I'd
off
love it.
From school for the week, which means they're going crazy and bouncing off the walls trying to entertain themselves.
So, Scooter X, who's joined us, our chat room is with us at irc.twit.tv. Scooter X suggests you broadcast a message on your smart speakers.
honey? Can you bring some booze?
Can I please get a Manhattan?
We're going to, this episode, as we usually do, we're going to look back at the year, which is actually not a festive thing this year at all.
Jeez,
but we'll find
kidding.
Something to be festive about. But I thought one of the things that happened this year is I got a very special candle from a PR agency thanking me for having one of their people on our shows, which as far as I know, we never did. Maybe that explains the candle because... the official scent of this is smitten. So I thought this would be appropriate during our holiday show. We should have a little, you know, we've got the fake fire. Let's have some real flame. I'm going to light the candle. And when I blow the candle out, that'll be it. The last twit of the year. There we go. So the little candle. We should mention next week is the best of episode. Right? Am
That's
I right? January 3rd.
Yeah, you're on.
And then January 9th is going to be a very special future episode. So we traditionally do this. We've done this for years, where one episode looks back at the year gone by, this episode. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to do an episode, and this was Amy Webb's idea, predicting the future. Amy Webb, our favorite futurist, will join us. So will one of my favorite sci-fi authors. I'm so excited. Daniel Suarez of...
Woohoo!
Yeah, really love him. Of Demon and Freedom TM and
Freedom.
So many great books will join us. I figured somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about the future should probably have something to say. And then we have a player to be named later. But we have some ideas we're working on.
Not only does he think about the future, but he thinks about like the interoperability of networks.
Yeah, you know? He's a really good guy to get for this because all of his books kind of our near future, here's where technology will take us kind of stuff. And I think that's fascinating. So Daniel will be a great guest. Of course, that's what Amy does for a living. But I'm now, and I've been putting it off, it's time to take a look back.
Oh, yay.
God.
The year that was 2021.
So it was 2020, right? Which is when it all started, the COVID nightmare. Then people were saying, 2021, WON. And then Lisa the other day realized, oh, no, it's 2022. So,
oh, God.
It's a year that will not.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's a year that will not give up. I guess if we're going to talk about the year past and the year in technology. So, but COVID has had a huge impact on tech. It's had people working from home. In fact, that may go on forever. I think in some ways it's changed how tech companies work. Many companies are now hiring people all over the world and letting them work from home. Of course, the Great Resignation has impacted tech. And I think you could also say that COVID-19 is complicit, maybe not the total cause of, the supply chain shortage. So tech very much affected. Oh, and there's one more. And there is a bright side to COVID-19. A lot of tech billionaires got really rich.
Mm-hmm. Yay, tech billionaires.
It was COVID's been great for Amazon, right?
I mean,
there are more people ordering than there ever have been. And, you know, I was just on Twitter yesterday seeing different people kind of talking about the year. And that was one of the things that they were talking about is not only are you ordering, you know, your Amazon packages, but people who are doing grocery delivery. So many of those new kind of industries that at least here in California have had an interesting go of things due to the different laws that we've tried to put in place to protect those individual delivery drivers. This has been even more of a thing this year than ever before because we are relying on them so much and trying to kind of adapt the way that we do or do not go shopping and visit stores and use folks who are there to do that.
In the first 3 months of 2021, Amazon's profit tripled, up 220%. Profit up 220%, $8.1 billion. And of course, who benefited from that besides the shareholders? The chief shareholder, the shareholder in chief, Jeff Bezos. But his title as the world's richest man was short-lived because another guy who benefited from COVID-19, Elon Musk, quickly overtook him and is currently, as of this recording, they're in a battle, a race, the richest man in the world. Elon is also the Time Magazine Man of the Year, Financial Times Man of the Year.
Elon. Not necessarily for good reasons,
yeah,
right?
He's
more
honestly,
for notorious reasons
he's
than
the
anything
troll
else.
Of the year.
Troll yeah. of the year.
Troll of the year. He just happens to also be one of the richest people on the planet.
You want to guess? I remember back in the day when we were all talking about Bill Gates being the richest guy in the world. He had $32 billion. It was like, how can it? What? He even said, after a few hundred million, you're infinitely wealthy. There's just nothing you can spend that on. So how? Anybody, don't look at the headlines. Want to guess what Elon is worth?
$300 billion?
Very good guess. Oh, okay. Little high. $243 billion.
How one person be worth that much money? Like, it ridiculous. Just boggles my brain. I don't understand.
Elon, of course, famously tweeted hundreds of tweets that were crazy. One of them was, should I sell my stock to pay my taxes? Which really wasn't a poll, although it's a little weird that he had a Twitter poll about whether he should sell his stock to pay his taxes. He did, in fact, pay $11 billion in taxes this year. But he didn't have a choice. It wasn't like...
I'm going to say, as he was supposed to,
yeah,
right?
It wasn't like the Twitter poll made up his mind. Okay, I guess I will. No, he kind of had to. He also... so many tweets. He also manipulated Dogecoin.
Dogecoin. Yeah, Dogecoin.
And continues. I think he's even still saying, you know, he's still riding the Doge train saying, 2022, it's all about Doge. This is where our bets are, you know. And, oh, boy. That's a whole other facet of the 2021 is the Dogecoin.
He was invited with his great wealth to solve the world's hunger problem I think it's a United Nations hunger commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
And Elon said, well, if you can say in a tweet how my $10 billion would solve the world's hunger, I'll be glad to do it. I don't think we ever heard the end of that one. I don't think.
I'd like to, and the thing is, I could believe him doing that. If they say, all right, this is how we can allocate this, I bet he would sign the check. Nobody signs checks now. Sorry.
It's not a question of signing. Who's going to cash a $10 billion check? That's what I want to know.
Right. And that's one of the few times where I sided with him on these shenanigans these days, because we have all of these different funds and packages that are supposed to be doing this and that for the people. But yet there's still millions and millions of people right here in our own backyard that are struggling and fighting to pay bills, and they're getting these little $600 checks.
Well, and it is a little painful when you look at somebody with $243 billion, more than any human ever could need. And to Elon's credit, it's not like he earned it. I mean, he didn't dig ditches to earn it.
No, he didn't.
But he
just made the right moves at the right time.
He almost bankrupted himself, both with Tesla and SpaceX. Yep. And I think you can make an argument that both Tesla and SpaceX have been a benefit to society, promoting electric vehicles and putting us back in space.
Research.
Yeah. It's not like he's not a capitalist. I'm sure he invested in both of those with the hopes to make money, but he risked his fortune to do that. And he made a lot. He made a pile of money. Is it fair to say that he benefited from COVID? Probably not.
How?
That's what I've been trying to figure out, too.
The one thing he did with COVID early on, and this was actually last year, he did not want to close the Tesla factory in Fremont, California, and during the early mask mandates he was told to, and he refused.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I remember
that. He refused. He risked not his life, his employee's life, to keep making cars. And he said, well, you know, I've got to because my competitors in Michigan are not closing their plants. Actually, what really closed plants in 2021 was supply chain shortages, not of not just of the big chips like Intel's and AMD's chips, but shortage of what we call legacy nodes, the chips that things like, in fact, who was it? One car manufacturer decided to start just shipping cars without automatic window openers. Because it's like we can't get the chips. We want to make the trucks, so let's just ship them out.
I wonder if that was Chevrolet.
No,
Chevrolet
actually,
or Ford.
I'm trying to remember who it was, and it wasn't window openers, but it was some minor like seat adjustment things or something like seat heaters.
Sounds like something Toyota would do, you know, along with their package deal of the key fob thing and everything. They're thinking of all sorts of ways to break down their vehicles and make money on every single little piece.
We talked about that yesterday on, or actually, whoops, I mean, last Sunday.
There we go. Good illusion.
Last Sunday on Twit with Tim Stevens, of course, who does Roadshow for CNET. And he said, they kind of got a lot of heat for something that maybe people pay $500 for that remote start option to Toyota. And it's even though it doesn't use wireless, doesn't use 3G, it just is a local network.
Proprietary software, right?
Yeah. It was always intended that you would pay for it. They just got the first, 3 years free. And so now that so it wasn't like they didn't, wasn't a later decision to do that.
I bet that was in the contract that the customers initially signed too, but
it was.
No one read that.
It was. Yeah. However,
it's still silly.
It's still silly. It's the same thing as BMW charging to use Apple's CarPlay, which they eventually retracted. But I asked him, I said, is this going to be, do you think this will be the future of cars is we'll have subscriptions? And of course, yes. And that was, by the way, that's another term that became all the rage this year. Revenue, what was it? It's R, revenue per...
Per unit? Annual revenue per
ARPU.
Unit?
Or ARPU. Annual revenue per unit. And by the way,
or
you're
user.
The unit.
User, maybe.
It's per user, but it's also per unit. And it is... So technically, it is per unit, according to Investopedia. But of course, per unit is per user.
Right.
And this is Apple kind of has done very well, right, Micah, saying, hey, we're a services company now. We're going to make – in fact, they don't even tell you how many smartphones they sold. They just tell you how much they make per user.
Yeah. Yep, and that just keeps growing as you see Apple expand. I mean, we saw that a lot this year, announcement after announcement. We talked about on Smart Tech Today about Apple adding its Apple TV platform to so many different places. You've got Apple Music on Android and iOS. So all of these ways that they are able to make money continually off of those services, it's no surprise that you're seeing a lot of companies make that move.
General Motors will stop shipping heated seats due to chip shortages. There it is. I got the actual story. Thank you.
And
it's like
and
building
that's
a Lego
that's a luxury.
Set.
It is.
And they,
just
they're missing
out,
Lego pieces.
You're
going
to leave out the green piece that holds
it. Yeah,
you don't need that to drive a car. But I think it is interesting. I mean, this is Tesla does this. You when you buy a Tesla, they say, if you give us $10,000 now, you'll be able to give us $500 a month down the road for full self-driving. Which is like,
wait, what?
Wait, yes, and wait, what is exactly the right response? Wait, what?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's oh, no.
Oh, and full self-driving, Elon said this week.
It'll never happen.
He said this week.
Let me give you
$10,000. They always
grand,
talk
so you
about.
Can charge me another $500 a month
yes.
in the future? Oh,
yes.
No. Oh, no.
Elon said this week. They always talk about the people who died in Tesla full self-driving accidents. They never talk about the people whose lives we saved.
Okay.
Were there Aww. Any?
Well, okay. We don't know because they
well, that's
they
yeah,
didn't
we
have an
would
accident.
Never really know that. Yeah.
Totally.
Is that a fair thing to say? Like, well, let's focus on the good that full self-driving does.
Honestly, I think personally, I think Elon has a point. We're
I do too.
This is the new technology, right? This is the new technology. Mm-hmm. All eyes are on it. We went through this probably I wasn't alive when we went through this, but when vehicles, when motor vehicles were new, that was a new technology, and there were more deaths as a result of motor vehicles than there were prior to it because they didn't exist. And, I don't know. I think he's got a point. I think we're so quick to jump on the fatality that happens without comparing the fatalities inside of, you know, Tesla vehicles to just vehicles at large. And I think we would probably find out that as a percentage in vehicles at large, a lot more fatalities. But it's just that Tesla's the new thing. We don't understand it, or the public doesn't understand it quite the same. And so it's extra scrutiny as a result.
There were more traffic deaths this year than there have been since 2016 by a huge margin. There were many, 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 many traffic deaths this year. And a lot of that is attributed to distracted driving. So in that way, yes, absolutely. I think that looking at automated driving as a way to get past that distracted driving death is really important.
When you look at unintended consequences of COVID-19, people don't think that because the roads were empty for most of last year. And even still a little slow this year because of, you know, people working from home and quarantining. And so there's some question why traffic fatalities went up in 2020 and early 2021. The thinking is because there are fewer people on the road, people are speeding more. And, of course, you're much more likely to die in a high-speed accident than you are in a slow accident. So the fact that there's less traffic is actually increasing traffic fatalities. That's the best theory anyway. We are going to do at the end of the show, by the way, we are going to lift you up because I realize we're bringing you down. We are going to lift you up with some of the funnest stories, the unusual. And this really belongs there, but we're in the Tesla section. So I'm going to bring it up this week. The first Tesla baby, a woman whose waters broke while the family was stuck in traffic. They put it on autopilot while she gave birth. So there you go, Elon. Not only lives saved, babies born.
Hey, can't deny that.
The world's slow clap for that.
With contractions increasing, by this way, this happened in September. We're just learning about it now. With contractions increasing rapidly and traffic barely moving, the couple realized they were not going to get to the hospital on time.
Oh, no.
Keating Sherry, her husband, put the vehicle on autopilot, set the navigation system to the hospital 20 minutes away. It's a good thing he paid that 10 grand for the autopilot. He said he laid one hand gently on the car's steering wheel as he attended to his wife. She was squeezing my hand to the point where I thought she was going to shatter it. I was saying, Yaron, that's his wife, okay, focus on your breathing. The decision over whether to try to wait to give birth until they reached the hospital was an agonizing one. Because traffic was stopped, she said, should I push? Should I hold? Should I push? Should I hold? Oh, F it. Let's do this, according to People magazine. She gave birth to her daughter in the self-driving vehicle as they arrived at the hospital, whispering, this might be the motto of all of 2021. Oh, my God, Keating, she's out.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Is the baby's name a bunch of...
It should be schwa, la, da, ba, da, da, da. Yes.
It's just X or Y or whatever their model number was of their Tesla.
The first Tesla baby.
Congratulations to him.
Yeah, mother and child are doing fine. Daddy Keating says, thank you, genius Tesla engineers, for your brilliant design of autopilot.
It worked this time.
So Elon, that's what Elon was probably thinking.
Congratulations to Elon, but if this were just a regular car, we wouldn't be celebrating that regular car. People would have just pulled over and handled business because they didn't have autopilot, and this wouldn't have been a news story. But
that's true. They would have just pulled over. You know what? What am I thinking?
Trumpet and Tesla for this, you know?
For years, people have just pulled over and had the baby. Yeah.
We're going to keep driving.
We are so efficient so much more in 2021. We are efficient.
Okay.
We multitask.
Let me try it out. A rational person would just pull over.
Pull over. You know, Ant, as always, you're the voice of reason. Let me just take a little breath of smitten.
Smitten.
Oh God. So
is it musky or like what does smell like?
Elon-y?
How would we describe it? Elon-y. It smells like Elon Musk after a long day at the office. I think it's floral. I would say.
Okay. Okay. All right.
By the way, it says on the label, thank you for being a shining light in the world of podcasts.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah.
Very nice.
You've earned that, sir.
I'm smitten. Fortunately, we have a molecule in here sucking all that right out of the air. Oh.
I had that realization this year. It's like, oh, I can't burn candles or incense and run my air purifier at the same time. That's sort of
taxing. Actually, you can go right ahead. I did tell the story on the last twit, and I'm embarrassed, but of the air purifier I ran all year, thinking,
oh boy.
It wasn't a molecule. It was another one. It was a HEPA. I have a molecule in the bedrooms, but I wanted a HEPA in the grand room just to kind of recycle the air, right? It's because people come over and stuff. And it was a big one. It was supposed to be 1,000 square feet or something. Some huge, so it like, do the whole room. It was very expensive. But I bought it, what do you call it? Not used. Refurbished.
There you go.
Saved some money. Came from Amazon. Set it up. We've been running it all year.
Oh, they call it renewed.
Renewed. You didn't hear this story? So the light comes on last week saying it's time for a new filter. It's been a year. I said, oh, that's great. So I open it. I order filters on Amazon. They come. I open it up. I go, I wonder where the filters go on this. There didn't seem to be any apparent place to, you know, old filters to take out. So I looked at the video online. There were no filters. They had come. Without filters. I guess
oh,
I was
serious. No, Leo.
For a year.
No. Running this thing.
No.
It's just a fan. It was a very, very expensive fan.
Oh, God.
Anyway, boy. It's working now. Thank God we had the molecules. So one of the points of controversy this week, and we talked about it in all the shows, was that Elon Musk was the man time of the year, person of the year, time mm-hmm. person of the year. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, always, and everybody does, have to point out, well, Hitler was person of the year once, too. So, you know, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be a good person, just a person. And certainly you could say Elon got a lot of attention. But it was my contention that the real heroes of 2021 were the vaccine scientists, particularly the mRNA scientists. And it turns out Time did acknowledge them as, like, scientists of the year. So
good.
Yeah. But I think that was another thing. And now here's an interesting point, and this actually was brought home to me when I was talking to Andy Weir, the author of The Martian. We were talking about his new book, which is excellent, by the way.
Really. Oh, yes.
Did you read it?
Hail Mary.
Hail Mary.
Hail Mary. Yes, it's great.
They're making a movie out of it.
Nice.
Yeah, in fact, we tried to get Andy Weir on our speculative thing on the 9th, but he's having a baby. He just had a baby. Congratulations, Andy. And he's like
congrats.
Deep in production on this movie with, I'm a little disappointed to say, Ryan Gosling is the lead. But, okay. You know,
you didn't say Ryan Gosling.
You know, Andy said this in the interview, and I'm going, oh, that's nice. Oh, okay. But The Martian was so good, right? And it was
agreed.
Such a great movie. So I'm sure it's the same, it's going to be, you know, the same quality and same writer. So anyway, Andy Weir, I was talking about the year and so forth, and he said, you know what, we're going to look back about 2021 and say, wow, is mRNA vaccines. This is a huge, huge breakthrough. The ability to use computers to do a genomic analysis. By the way, they were able to do that back in, I think it was November or December, a year ago, using a computer in a weekend to generate the whole genome, and then again, using computers, generate a vaccine that would target that genome. They were, in a matter of a week or two, able to create a vaccine. Now, of course, what took so long was testing, because we, rightly so, we want to make sure it's safe and effective. So that took almost, you know, that took a long time. But they were able to generate that. Actually, they did that back in 2020, almost immediately after the pandemic broke out. They were able to do that, and then they tested it all year. The vaccine came out at the end of last year, but I think this is officially the year of the mRNA vaccine. And yeah. Andy said, you're going to see vaccines for a huge number of diseases we've thought intractable, including possibly cancer, thanks to this breakthrough technology. So, you know, we may talk about supply chain and the latest, you know, chip from Apple, but really it could very well be that mRNA vaccine, that breakthrough, which, by the way, did not happen overnight. Scientists particular one scientist has been working on it 10 years, laughed at, mocked, underfunded, but she persisted, and thank goodness she was there when COVID-19 showed up.
So, no doubt.
Yeah. All right. We can leave the COVID, unless we want to talk about supply chain at all. That is not easing up, and that is going to be with us next year, too.
More people know that word than ever before.
I know. I mean,
yeah, whoever sort of understand the everybody's blaming the supply chain right now. Yeah. Everybody's like, supply chain!
I'm angry this morning, and it's because of the supply chain.
Well, and as always,
I tried that on the hard heads, and it didn't quite work, because they walk up and say, hey, Dad, can I have so-and-so? And I just say supply chain, and they just look at
it's a supply chain issue, son. You just wouldn't understand.
It's kind of weird what's missing, though, right? Like, there are some things that you wouldn't expect. We were talking to somebody, Jason Howell and I, on Tech News Weekly, and they were saying, I wanted to play tennis with some friends. I went to the store and could not find tennis balls anywhere. Mm. And it's because of the supply chain.
Yeah,
it's just interesting what ends up getting hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were the vaccine scientists for Time Magazine's Heroes of the Year. Thank you, Scooter X, for that the correction. The miracle workers. And if I paid for Time Magazine, I could show you their picture. But instead, I'm getting this. This might also be the year of the rise of the paywall this year.
Yeah, no
literal
kidding.
Rise. Like, it's getting bigger. It's rising up on the page.
This paywall is literally a wall blocking me from the rest of this article. Yeah. Like, I could just peer over the wall and I could see just the tops of their heads. I guess I'll
sometimes you can just view the cached version, and that works too.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, there's always
workarounds. There's always workarounds.
Sometimes.
I don't know if paywalls are a good thing or not. Most companies have figured out to give you a few articles and then you pay. And most people have figured out, if they don't want to pay, how to get around all that with things like caching. So this is also the year of the aggressive cookie banner.
No kidding. I mean, every single place you go, and if you go to that site a million times, you're going to see it a million times. I mean, it's kind of like, at this point, I feel numbed to it, and I don't like that because the second it pops up, I'm like, okay. I'm kind of at
you don't
this
even
point
read it.
Where I'm so downtrodden. I don't even read it. I just hit okay.
Am I the only person that actually opens up the settings and unchecks the stuff that I don't want?
Yeah,
as part of that.
Oh, God, yeah. You're definitely the only person that does that.
Really? I applaud you that you do that. Yeah. But
every time I see, and not everybody offers that option. Most of them just say, just click here to view what we're doing. But there are a few that says, okay, if you click here, you can uncheck this one and uncheck that one. And there's one that's like a mandatory one for, you know, just in case you log in, they have to have that. But the other stuff, they let you tick off.
If you don't in any way record people's information and you don't save their IP addresses, you know, rotate your logs or whatever, you don't really need to do it. Mm-hmm. But and for instance, we were told, oh, you have to do it. You use Google Analytics. We just want to see how many people see the site and which parts of the site are popular. I don't think that's an invasive thing. But of course, I guess Google gets the IP address, so maybe it is. Anyway, so we said we have to do a cookie. And I said, well, let's just do the passive aggressive, somewhat hostile cookie that they do on TechDirt.
Yeah.
And we duplicated that, which is basically, look, every site uses cookies. Get over it. And we do too. Click here.
Yeah.
And nobody's complained about it. TechDirt's been doing it for a while. But it's not because we're not spying on you. We're not trying to collect information. So what is the weirdest supply chain shortage? Chips are obvious, you know, no car seat heaters in GM vehicles. It's been hard to get, you know what, the really bad one has been the Microsoft's Xbox Series X and to a lesser degree, PlayStation.
I was going to say PlayStation because here recently, I don't know why, but I've been looking at picking up PlayStation again because I used to play years ago. And then when I started looking, it's like nobody has them available. But I assumed it was all because of the supply chain. Is the latest one PS5?
Yeah,
sure.
And that you can get.
Yep,
it, but Microsoft says we had Chris Cappicella on last year, the CMO of Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And he said last year, he said, this is going to go on for a while. We don't want to give people a chance to order something if we can't deliver it in any time frame. And this is where Apple really shines. I mean, if you order a MacBook Pro 16-inch right now, you won't get it till Valentine's Day. But at least they give you a date. Microsoft, I said, why don't you do that? And they said, Chris said, we can't. Because we
is it because Apple pretty much runs the whole stack themselves, though?
They lock it in. They lock it in. So the weirdest supply chain, in my opinion, shortage is cream cheese.
Wait, what?
Oh.
Did you not notice?
No cheesecake for you.
You cannot get cream cheese to save your life.
Yeah, I didn't notice.
Maybe that's because I ate a lot of bagels. I have to have cream cheese.
Well, sir, we are in dadgum Petaluma, the home of dairy and eggs. We're going to be just
You'd think.
Fine. I've been seeing cream cheese.
You've been seeing it?
Yes.
Where do you get your cream cheese, dude?
Yeah, I've not had any problems with cream cheese.
Oh, my God. Often, maybe it's only in New Jersey and Boston. This is from the Boston Herald. Supply chain shortage impacts animal goods, including cream cheese, Schmears, Kraft, Philadelphia cream cheese. They actually put out an ad. On spreadthefeeling.com, their promotional site.
Oh boy.
It says, you may not be able to find Philly to make a cheesecake. Look at the empty shelf. So get any other dessert on us.
Oh, interesting. Oh,
wow.
Sorry. All rewards have been claimed.
Never mind. See, that even the reward is a shortage.
Even there's a shortage of awards.
Yes. Gosh, another thing that I've noticed is that if you are a fan of getting Christmas trees, there's fewer to choose from.
Are there?
Apparently, they're really expensive. And then if you want to get an artificial tree to replace it with because they're made of plastic and everything, those are up as like 25% over last year because of shortages. So if you like Christmas trees, either way you go, you're screwed.
I found that out last year. We decided to go with the fake tree because normally we get a real tree, and it was ridiculous the price. You know, Queen Brewer was like, go find a tree. So I went, okay, I'll go find one. And I was like, heck no, I'm not paying for that. I said, I'll go and look for something, you know, an artificial tree. And even that was a bit of a markup, but we got one, and I know we can at least have that for another 5 to 10 years. So we'll be all right.
Cream cheese may not just be a supply chain issue. It was also a ransomware issue. That is one of the other big stories of the week. We're going to get to that of the year, I should say. We're going to get to that after this word from Smitten. God. Can you almost, when I do that, can you almost smell it?
It kind of smells sour. Like I'm not there, but I just feel like it's probably a sour smell.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if anybody looks cooler smelling a candle than you, sir.
I don't know what this outfit is. I just threw on whatever I had in the closet.
Work it, sir.
I like the gigantic collar, I got to say.
Yes, just work it.
I don't know what's going on here. Actually, I do want to talk about a brand new sponsor. Do any of you use Blue Land?
No, I'm smitten by Blue Land.
I'm smitten.
Yeah, smitten.
So we look at, you know, the number one, and far as I'm concerned, number one environmental thing everybody needs to address is plastic, single-use plastic. It's a problem. You know, we talk about clean up the oceans. Remember the YouTube stars raising millions of dollars to clean up the ocean? The amount of plastic they removed for all that money from the ocean was replaced in 15 hours by more waste.
Wow.
15 hours. Mm. The solution is not to clean up the ocean. Well, certainly we want to do that, but let's also use a little less plastic in our lives. An estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away every year. I mean, it's a waste of natural resources. It's a waste of landfill. This is a forever bottle from Blue Land, and I like it. So I've actually done it kind of the wrong way around. I have some other bottles. These are cleaner bottles. It actually says on it what this is. So this is the glass and mirror. This is like to, you know, for your glass cleaner. They have a hand soap bottle. They are famous for their toilet cleaning pellets. We actually got the Clean Essentials kit, so it has everything in there. And then there's you also get a little tin to put your laundry pellets in. It's great laundry soap. So instead of the plastic dissolvable laundry soap or the big plastic gallon bottles of laundry detergent, you just throw this tablet in, and the waste is so much lower. And it works. Now, I have to tell you, Blueland's toilet tablet cleaner is so popular that it sells out. So they have some right now. But that's a supply chain shortage, I guess, mainly because people love it. You just put it in the toilet. You let it fizz, bubble. You clean the toilet. You're done. It's really easy. I'm going to show you how this works. So this is the normally what you do is you put the tablet in and then you add water. But I'm going to do it the other way around because I don't want to get up. This is the bathroom cleaner. So you spritz this, you know. I've got a multi-surface cleaner. These are the little tablets. And, of course, they don't send you more bottles. By the way, when you buy a bottle of cleaner, not only the plastic, most of the cost is about 90% water. And then just a little bit of active ingredient, right? So they're shipping you water, which you have in plentitude at home. So save the planet. This is the hand soap, by the way. That'll go in here. So put water in here. Put a tablet in there. It foams up. It's as good as anything. It's great. Here's the glass and mirror cleaner. So I'm going to put the tablet in here. This is the little Blueland pellet. This is all the active ingredients you get with any commercial cleaner, but they don't ship the water. They just ship the tablet. Let me do this on camera. Okay, there you go. I'm going to drop it in. I'm going to close it up. It's going to foam for a little bit. You let it sit. And now I have bathroom cleaner, spritzer, surface cleaner. It's just great. This stuff really works. You buy the bottle once. They call them their forever bottles. You refill it forever. No more plastic waste. The only thing you got to get rid of is your outdated idea that eco-friendly products are more expensive and less effective. These work, I can vouch for it, better than some of the products I'm using. Better. Stop wasting water, throwing out more plastic. Get Blueland's revolutionary refill cleaning system instead. Blueland was founded on the belief that a cleaner planet starts by eliminating plastic waste while creating powerful, effective cleaners for your entire home. The dish soap is fantastic. The laundry detergent is fantastic. The toilet cleaner is fantastic. Just fill Blueland's beautiful Instagrammable bottles with warm water. Pop in one of the hand soap or spray cleaner tablets within a minute. Powerful cleaning products. And by the way, they smell a lot better than the smitten candle. Iris, agave, pairing, lemon, lavender, eucalyptus. Oh, that one, that smells good. I don't know what that is. I think it's the eucalyptus. From their best-selling Clean Essentials kit, that's what we got. But once you get it, then you just, you know, buy the refills to their hand soap duo and plastic-free laundry and dishwasher tablets. Blueland has something for every inch of your home. And as I said, backed by very popular demand. Debbie loves these, by the way. She's been using them for months. The Blueland Toilet Tablet Cleaner. Get it before it sells out again. The high-quality forever bottles, some of them are glass like this because of the weight. The hand soap, foaming hand soap is glass, so it's heavy, so you know it sits on your counter. Some of them are plastic because you're going to carry them around and use them. They start at just $10 when you buy a kit. They are reused forever, but you know you can get more, I guess. Even if they lasted a year or two, you're saving hundreds of bottles from going into the landfill. And then the tablets, get this, start at just $2. So you're going to save money, and this stuff works really well. It's basically the same ingredients. It's just they don't ship them all dissolved, pre-dissolved for you. You'll love it. Your planet will thank you. Finally, you can do something without sacrifice, right? It's way past time to make cleaning fun, beautiful, and plastic-free. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order. Go to blueland.com/twit. That's 20% off your first order of any Blueland products. blueland.com/twit. They actually really look nice, too, the Blueland bottles. And because they're labeled and everything, it's nice. Now, this is still dissolving. By the end of the show, I will be able to wipe up the smitten candle residue. Blueland. Thank you, Blueland. We're really glad to get Blueland on. We've been using it for some time. Yeah, it's a really good product. And very happy to have them on our holiday special. We are celebrating, and I mean celebrating, the end of 2021, the year that would not end.
putting it behind
us. As best as we can, anyways.
In the, considering what happened. Holy cow. So the cream cheese shortage is also because in October, Schreiber Foods, which is in Wisconsin, had to shut down during its busy peak period right before Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, and Christmas, making cream cheese because of ransomware. They have annual sales of cream cheese of $5 billion.
Whoa.
Wow.
Goodness.
So it may say Philly on the front, but a Schreiber on the back, I guess. The company also makes cheese slices, yogurt. Every cream cheese producer was already struggling to keep up adequate supply. So there is, you know, it's partly supply chain, but this does not help. Certainly 2021. And I think this is going to be, you're going to always say the same thing in a year. 2022 was the year ransomware got worse.
Yeah, I think it's only going to get more and more prevalent nowadays because the tools are out there for these bad people to just do it. And a lot of folks aren't as security conscious as we keep preaching to them to try to be security conscious. I mean, I got, I want to say, 4 emails today and 4 notifications today across 4 different online platforms where someone was trying to get into my account.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, wow.
Yeah. And if that was anybody else, it's probably a problem.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Use I got to have factor. A moment. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, exactly. Use 2-factor. And I got to give a little shout out to my grandma because I saw some pretty sophisticated different attempts coming at me. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to reach out to her and give her a rundown of the latest
That's
couple
great.
Or the latest 3 or 4.
Nice.
And she responded. She's like, oh, I'm good. I pretty much every time someone texts me who I don't know or emails me who I don't know, I just get rid of it. She's like, I'm not falling for any of that stuff. And I thought, nice. You are awesome. Yeah, she's
Your
very,
grandma's
very
way
wise
cooler.
Yeah.
She's pretty cool. She is pretty cool.
Did you read the Sunday Times article? This is so broke my heart. Tragic. It's a scam. Scammers pretending to be from Harvard University offer jobs to women in India. It is just horrific. And I think your grandmother, I mean, for a lot of the women, it's like, well, wait a minute, that's a number from Dubai, not Boston. But what happened was they slowly improved their attack. They bought a web domain, harvardcareers.com, put the Harvard logo on it. It got more and more sophisticated. They got Harvard letterhead. They got the names of deans, and they pretended to be the deans when they called. And they tricked one of India's best-known news broadcasters. She'd been 20 years in the business, audience of 1 billion people. But she was getting tired of the political situation, and it just was, she was job burnout. And she thought she had this great job offer paying $151,000 to teach at Harvard in Boston. She thought it was real. She quit her job. She tweeted, I'm going to Boston. It was all a scam.
Oh, my God. This is awful.
It broke horrible. My heart.
Dang it.
Mm. But the, you know, I mean, on the one hand, you could say, well, you know, Micah's grandmother wouldn't have fallen for that. But the problem is they were targeted all in every case. The journalists were anti-Modi, anti-nationalist reporters. They had written critical stories about the government. So no one knows, you know, they gave them passports and all sorts of details, but none of that stuff was ever used. So no one knows. But the suspicion is that this is maybe the government or
sophisticated.
It's something like that where they're. Yeah, it is sophisticated, and they're you know, they're trying to get these people out of the country to shut them up.
Mm. Yeah, there's that.
A little criticism to Harvard for not doing anything about it, even though they had been warned about it. Just a tragic story, but it just shows, you know, look, these scams have always happened, but the internet makes it, you know, a lot easier, right?
Okay,
it makes it a lot easier.
Probably going
to
show
cases.
Some ignorance.
Hold on, go ahead, Micah.
I was just going to say the sophistication continues to increase in some ways, and that's what's troubling to me, because sophistication typically requires money, and so you do wonder, you know, how many of these people are they actually scamming in order to be able to make this amount of money to continue to justify their continuing expenditures to make this thing as sophisticated as it is. That's the part that's quite terrifying, and we talked about bogosity filters before. These are things that would not chirp off your bogosity filter. You wouldn't think it was bogus because it's so sophisticated.
Yeah. The Times hired security experts, all sorts of forensics people, brought them in, and they never were able to uncover who it was. That's the other thing, is it's possible to really do this completely anonymously, or a motive for it. And all of the you know, the tripwires like Gmail and so forth that should have warned her did not. By the way, she had quit her job. She did not have a job at Harvard. She's, according to the Times, quietly beginning to rebuild her life teaching public policy at an Indian university and writing for a newspaper. But she keeps asking herself the same question. How could I be so stupid? You wanted to ask a question.
Well, I was going to say I'm probably showing my ignorance, but you mentioned Harvard is getting grief for not stepping in to do something about this. What exactly could they have done, considering that anybody and everybody can download a dadgum JPEG from the website and build a website from whatever domainbuilder.com within a few minutes and just pawn this stuff off as a legitimate service and site? So what exactly?
Yeah, it's not exactly their fault. Done? But according to the Times, Harvard fiercely protects its trademark. They use software to detect websites that pretend to be from Harvard. They never,
cease and desist.
Yeah, they haven't said whether they knew about HarvardCareer.com or did anything about it. One of the early victims of the scam called Harvard and alerted them to this scam, but apparently they did nothing to let people know. They didn't look for other victims. So I don't know how much of it is Harvard's fault. You're right. It could happen to anybody. Yeah.
But even if there were cease and desist sent out or whatever, right, you think that was going to stop anything?
No.
Probably not.
I guess really the only moral of this is be like Micah's grandma.
Yeah.
And I mean, so one of my grandma's friends, she was using that kind of as a comparison, unfortunately was taken by a scam, and she was kind of talking to the friend, because I've always been this way with my grandma, very encouraging of the fact that if something like this happens, you should not take that time to blame yourself. Like it is easy, and you do fall into that pattern of like, ah, oh, how did I fall for that? And her friend was feeling that same way. And you know, my grandma was talking to her. She's like, what my grandson talks about is how technology should work in our favor and should have all of these things in place. And so when those kinds of things happen, it's the technology that's at fault and the person who was doing this to you who's at fault. It's not it's not something that you should spend the time just, you know, beating yourself up over, oh, I should have picked that up. I should have picked this up. It's hard to realize those things. It's hard to pick up on that. And it kills me, for people to be blaming themselves and feeling so kind of lost after that happens, given the fact that there are any number of people who could have fallen for that. It's not something that's just so simple to pick out. So yeah, I just encourage people, don't beat yourself up too much, because in those situations, someone is trying very hard and playing on all of the right psychological things to get you to do the thing that they want you to do.
They've figured it out. They've cracked the code. That's one thing that kind of comes to mind when I'm hearing you talk about this, Micah, is that like, there has never been, it feels, and maybe it feels this way because we're in the midst of it right now, but when we're talking about ransomware, we're talking about hacks, we're talking about all of these different aspects of security online, it feels now more than ever that there is that the attackers are far ahead of the people who are protecting and trying to, you know, lock the doors before they get in. It seems like the people who are hacking or doing the ransomware attacks, they know so much more than I think those threat actors in the past seem to know. There's some distance now between between the people who would stop this from happening and the people who are just like, you know what, it's easier than ever. The stakes are as high as they've ever been. Like, it's overwhelming. So, of course, someone shouldn't blame themselves if they fall for it. It's that sophisticated now.
Yeah, just tragic. And I guess it's our job, really, to spread the word as much as possible and to tell people, you know.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, Micah's grandma is so educated,
at least is working for, you know, for some. Probably people are more educated about this stuff now than they were 10 years ago or 15 years ago, you know, with the email scams that were happening then and everything was so fresh and new. We're a lot more knowledgeable about the possibility of these threats now. It's just the stakes are a whole lot higher.
Yeah.
It makes, I appreciate the fact that you said, Mr. Laporte, you hate to tell people to be cynical, because I think about a situation at one of my previous employers where a coworker got an email from one of the, you know, upper management people about XYZ report, because that's what they normally get. Mm-hmm. And of course, when they went to open that spreadsheet, it was a problem, you know. But at the same time, we can't fault this person that they were just doing their job. It's, you know, they're just doing what they do all day long. They know that their superior is going to send over some type of report on a regular basis and talk about it. And you just open it up, and sadly, some mess happened.
And, you know, somewhat of the blame goes to companies like Google and Microsoft, because their software has been so horrifically
bad. All those holes.
I can't remember what the last count. We'll have to do a tally on Security Now next year on 0-day flaws in Google's Chrome, but it was more than 13 in a year, more than one a month. More than one a month. And Microsoft's 2021, you know, I'm sure Microsoft really, really wanted to be able to say, hey, you know, we've really locked down our operating system. But routinely on Patch Tuesdays, there's more than 100 flaws being fixed every
month
Tuesday. And that doesn't even bring up the big ones, which are the Exchange server vulnerabilities, you know, the SolarWinds flaw. There have been some really nasty ones. On June 8th, Microsoft patched six zero days. Six of them.
Wow.
Then there was the print spooler vulnerability, print nightmare.
I remember that.
Yeah. Micah has to listen to Security Now. He produces the show. So, you know, he was nothing but every week. Oh, and there's another one. Oh, here's another one. There's another one.
Print Jason nightmare. Produces Security Now, but I remember being in for one episode. I think that's what it was.
You hosted.
Yeah, you two were out, and so I ended up covering Print Nightmare. And
that's
I was
what
like,
it was. Yes.
Wait, they're telling you the Microsoft solution at the time was you just can't print for right now.
Yeah, just don't use your printer. Just don't. That would be a bad idea.
best tech support ever.
It's one of those things where, you know, I've always said, okay, fine. If Microsoft's fixing flaws from older software, that software has problems and fixes them. You should fix them when you find them. That's fine. But if they're fixing problems introduced newly, then you need to really look at your process and see what you're doing, that you keep making these same mistakes over and over and over again. Of course, you can't even really say we're looking back at 2021 when we talk about the worst flaw of 2021, which is probably the worst security flaw of all time. We're just starting to see the fallout of the log4j problem. This is a Java-based logger that's used on pretty much every server everywhere. Apple uses it. Microsoft uses it. It's from the Apache Foundation. Amazon uses it. Everybody uses it. And it is not merely a bad zero day. It's trivial to exploit. So I could do it, which is... anybody could do it. It's just putting a little string in your browser and suddenly you have full access to whatever's behind the wall on that server. That's horrific. And the problem is, it'll be patched. Probably, you know, the people who do it, it's an open source project. Volunteers do it. They worked very hard over Thanksgiving weekend to fix it. By the way, there have been three now, and there'll probably be more because they keep finding more problems with it, but they keep fixing them.
But sorry, did you say volunteers? Why was it?
It's not a
volunteer.
It's an open source project.
Oh, okay,
it's,
gotcha.
It's
okay.
All unpaid Paxton, right? Volunteers doing this. That's gotcha. The other dirty little secret of enterprise software. These companies are making billions, but often their entire stack relies on an open source project maintained by some guy in Turkey. You know, it's just, it's not, it's a very weird model. In any event, even if they fix it, we don't know how many systems have been compromised, and we may never know because these guys are going in there. And a lot of them are nation states. We know China's been doing it, and they're just sitting there. And they say,
one of my favorite analogies of yours regarding this was the fact that, this is getting patched, but unfortunately, the bad guys are already
in.
Already in.
You know, you're closing the gate behind them.
So this was an absolute nightmare year for security. Reval, that was the one bright side. Reval, which is the horrible ransomware attack gang, and you're going to talk about this is one of your story picks. So I won't give away all the story. But the good news is we got them. I think we got them. So they finally did something so horrific, such a horrific infrastructure attack that the FBI. Police from all over the world, they tracked him down, and I think they've shut him down forever, and arrested a number of affiliates, and maybe even one of the guys behind Reval. Reval was ransomware as a service, which is another modern concept. These guys set up a website where you could go and say, "Yeah, I would like to buy some ransomware, please. I'll give you 10% of what I make," and then so they don't have to know anything about ransomware attacks. They just have to get in. Yeah. Put it on the system. They collect the money. They pay Reval their 10%, and they move on. And so there were many, many affiliates doing this. So it's not just cream cheese anymore.
No, it's definitely more than cream cheese.
Another story. Another story this year. A fun story. Billionaires in space.
Hey, you need to put that in air quotes, sir. Space.
Yes, yeah. Sort of space-ish.
In low Earth orbit.
Spacish. So what was the chronology of this? Did it start with Bezos saying he was going to go up in his penis rocket?
It's a good question.
In a text message.
And then Richard Branson said, no, I'm going to go up in mine first in Virgin Galactic. And then Elon... He kind of trolled them saying, I'm not going up at all. I'm just sending people to the space station and the moon.
He says, I got bigger fish to fry.
I got bigger fish to fry. Yeah.
That'll show you.
Then William Shatner went up, which I think was a very smooth PR move. Because yeah, Captain Kirk was in tears after, you know, he was like so moved.
You know, I saw Shatner's, one of his talks. I listened to Adam Carolla, and I know he's very controversial, but his podcast is pretty funny.
He's a good friend. I like Adam a lot. Yeah.
And he had Shatner on after his you know space ride and whatnot. And the way Shatner talked about it in that interview, it was just unbelievable. Because before, you know, leading up to that, they were just having general conversation. He has this specific tone, and he's a big ham. You know, he's an actor, you know. But when he started to talk about that experience and just how moving it was and just how, you know, he started to reconsider, you know, what really matters in life. And it was quite moving. If you can, I highly recommend y'all look that up and listen to it. It was really, really, really
well. And of course, they made a documentary. That's the other thing on Amazon Prime. You can watch Shatner in Space, the documentary.
By the way, do you get the full post-flight Shatner speech?
Yeah, probably, because didn't Bezos cut him off?
Yeah, yes. They cut him off.
Yeah,
they cut him off. He was in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. He said, stop talking. Drink champagne.
And then continued. But, I mean, it was really sweet. I mean, hearing Shatner talk about it, you could tell. I mean, we all know Shatner for, you know, Star Trek and his entire career. He's been very visible around that franchise and, you know, have the association with space. But to see someone of his background actually go, you know, as about as close as most of us will ever get to space and come back and have just, I mean, there were beautiful words. Like, you could tell he was moved emotionally through that experience. And that was a highlight, definitely. Watching that put a smile on my face.
I love it because YouTube comments, which pull no punch, the very first comment on the teaser for Shatner in Space is, I kind of hope we get that clip where Shatner was trying to tell Jeff Bezos how extraordinary he felt, and Jeff just left in mid-conversation. It's true. We all saw it. Yeah. We all saw it.
What's your deal, Jeff?
Somebody in the chat room said, you got to say billionaires in space because billionaires in low Earth orbit is not, you know, just doesn't really
it's
quite.
Not quite.
Billionaires the in the stratosphere. Yeah. Doesn't have the same thing.
Billionaires closer to space than you'll probably ever be.
True. Although
the musical,
I think NASA says matter. We're not going to give wings to everybody. Stop it.
Yeah, I saw that the FAA.
Where's the FAA? Right.
Yeah. FAA. Yeah. Said no. We only have so many astronaut wings. Sorry.
No more commercial astronaut wings. Too many launching, says the Federal Aviation Administration. It was cool that when Bezos went up, he also brought...
that was really cool.
What was her name? The older woman who tried really hard to be an astronaut, but in those days, NASA didn't have female astronauts. So she got to train people, and she was a flying teacher, but she finally did get at least space-adjacent with the Blue Origin. So that was a very nice story. I'm sorry, I've forgotten her name. Michael Strahan's gone up now, the football and Good Morning America star.
I mean, is there any reason they shouldn't be going to space if they have the means to do it?
There is
an
environmental issue going on.
There's environmental issues with everything today.
That's true.
That's because we don't have much time before all of us die in a
horrible
heat fire.
Thank you very much. It was Wally Funk. I think I read that the amount of... pollution put into the atmosphere by that rocket is like the equivalent of all of Jeff Bezos' private jet flights for a year. I think it's something on that order.
Wow, interesting.
That's
I didn't know it was that high. Good grief.
That was one of the trolling tweets that Elon Musk said is, you know, our rockets do not pollute in the same to the, nearly the same degree. It's possible to do this with considerably less pollution. I'm not an expert on that. Yeah, I've talked about it with Rod Pyle on the radio show. I have to. Let's see. Oh, okay. Fact check. Thank you. According to USA Today, Jeff Bezos' new Shepard rocket launch did not. Oh, behind a firewall, behind a paywall.
Darn it!
Did not something.
The year of the
not,
paywall
did not emit carbon. Okay. Okay. So there you
what
go.
What did it emit?
We don't know. I had seen this Facebook post that said it put hundreds of tons of carbon dioxide. That is actually USA Today said it did not.
Sorry, Leo, did you say a Facebook post?
Yeah.
Never mind. I forgot I saw that on Facebook. SpaceX's Falcon rockets use kerosene. In fact, the Blue Origin uses a liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen combination, Blue Engine 3, that is does not emit carbon dioxide into the atmosphere or during the launch.
Oh, yeah. Shatner was talking about hydrogen in his commentary and how he was just a bit nervous because he's like, hydrogen, really? Heat blowing up? He was a little nervous.
It's not completely neutral. The amount of water it puts in the air is apparently problematic, but yeah, I know. You would think that's a good thing, but water vapor emissions from individual launches can notably impact the mesosphere and ionosphere, but do not contribute to carbon emissions. So there you go.
It's kind of amazing how violent, if you make water, as opposed to just existing as H2O, if you actually take hydrogen and oxygen and combine them to make water, it's actually quite a violent reaction. So I'm not surprised that they can harness that to propel something.
Billionaires in space. I guess that's all there is to say about that.
Billionaires near space.
I did enjoy that.
If you had a quarter of a million, you could do it
too. Civilians.
Yeah.
I did enjoy that.
They paid. The civilians in the SpaceX
right?
launch. Yeah, the Inspiration 4. Yeah, that was very cool.
I did enjoy that.
Yeah.
Those are regular people with the
And they orbited. So, yeah. No, that's pretty darn cool. This was the year that Jeff Bezos did step down as CEO as Amazon. Andy Jassy mm-hmm. taking over. Jassy, a close lieutenant who had run the very, very profitable Amazon Web Services division. And as far as I know, it's been good. One of the first things that happened when Jassy took the helm is Amazon announced it was going to raise the minimum wage. They did a number of things that were a little bit, I think, probably more kinder to the warehouse staff. So, but I haven't seen any big changes in Amazon. It's certainly been very profitable.
Well, they still have some work to do on
they have a little work to do.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know,
and, of course, the tornado tragedy.
Tornadoes.
Yeah, in Illinois.
Yeah, word, yeah.
Yeah. Jack Dorsey stepped down this year, too. Let's not forget the CEO of Twitter.
Who's he?
One of the founders. The guy with the beard and the nose ring, you know him.
Oh, okay.
Jack Dorsey. He's going to...
I thought he ran Square, not Twitter.
He is running Square now, and except it's not Square anymore. This was also the year that a number of companies decided to change their names. Square changed its name to Block because they're all over the blockchain.
And now it's getting sued by H&R Block because H&R Block is trying to claim trademark on that. So that's an interesting situation.
Yeah. And then Facebook changed its name to Meta. That's either the biggest story of the year or a non-story. I can't decide.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree.
Right?
It's really hard to know.
Facebook had a really rough year and all entirely brought on by its own self. And so it is interesting. While the name change itself is maybe a non-story, the idea that it's changed its name for the metaverse or that it changed its name to try to get away from all of the stuff that Facebook had to deal with this year, that part is a big story. I mean, the Facebook papers and, you know, testifying before Congress.
Huge story.
All sorts of stuff going on there.
Francis Haugen, the whistleblower who released a lot of documentation showing that Facebook probably knew and probably decided not to do anything about the damage that they were doing, not just politically, but to young girls' psyches on Instagram. I think the kind of the quote that I will remember is Facebook values profits over people. Which is not a good thing for a company that really kind of pretends that it's all about connecting people.
Connecting people at people's expense is Facebook's deal.
Yeah, and we'll take that. Thank you very much. I think that we might have said at the beginning of the year that the tech lash was going to be a big story. Congress, the FTC, the EU, all investigating some fairly hefty fines coming out of the EU now. To some of the big tech companies. But I also think we're starting to see that was a lot of sound and fury, but mm-hmm. I don't know if much is going to happen.
No.
What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, it keeps going. We keep seeing the things that make us believe that there might possibly be some changes, right? Like CEOs going to Congress, testifying, blah, blah, blah. But each time it happens, there seems to be no resolution. There seems to be no there. It all seems to be kind of staged for show. And so if there is change that's going to come about from regulation and, you know, these folks going to D.C. and having to testify on the behalf of their companies, we certainly haven't seen it yet. There haven't been many clues this year, that make me feel very positive about that.
Mr. Howell, as long as there's lobbyists... Ain't nothing gonna change, sir.
Well, and that's an interesting point because it's almost certain that Congress will do nothing. Not just because of lobbyists, but let's not forget that politicians love to advertise on Facebook. Uh-huh. You know, at the same time as they're critical of Facebook, they benefit from all this data collection. Mm-hmm. They use it. So I think they're maybe somewhat less likely to try to shut it down. I think they're going to make a lot of noise. I doubt much will happen. Now, on the other hand, the FTC and Lina Khan, the new chairman of the FTC, it has more teeth and is more aggressive than I can remember the FTC being, even back in the bad era for Microsoft of the late 90s when they got in trouble with the DOJ. I feel like the Lina Khan, in fact, Google asked a court to force her to recuse herself because she'd written such anti-Google and anti-big tech pieces as a professor. The courts, by the way, rejected that. She is very much going after big tech. Now, can the FTC make a difference? Can they do something without the support of Congress? And, you know, my suspicion is that the current administration doesn't have a lot of teeth because of a split Congress or split Senate. Mm. I just wonder how much she's going to get done. But it's pretty clear she's going to try. And it's also clear Google was very afraid.
Yeah, there was something you mentioned on the tech guy that stuck with me, though, that makes me think that there will be regulations that take place, but they are championed by those big tech companies because of how they snuff out smaller tech companies who can't hold up to those regulations that are needed. What was that that you meant? There's a term for it.
Regulatory capture is the term that Jeff Jarvis always uses. But you know this is going on because I watch a lot of football, and there's on every NFL game there's at least one or two Meta ads featuring often Meta content overseers, you know, kind of people on the ground who are managing the content on Facebook, who say we need a law. Congress ought to pass a law. We can't do it alone. And it sounds like Facebook's on the side of the angels saying, we ought to be regulate us. But really, it's important to understand that any regulation Congress comes up with, Facebook will be well positioned, as big as they are, as rich as they are, as powerful as they are, to handle. But will also have the very strong effect of stifling any competition, because nobody coming up will have the resources to deal with these requirements. So it's pretty obvious when Facebook's lobbying Congress to pass a law regulating tech that it is somehow for their benefit. And I think that's how it's called, regulatory capture.
And Facebook is going to continue to make so much money because the users are not going to go away.
They're trapped.
That's the bottom line.
They can't go.
They're not going to go away. Yeah. People can hate Facebook and everything that it stands for, but for whatever reason, they're not going to drop it, even if it's just to stay in touch with the grandkids.
But remember, you might have said the same thing about MySpace, right? And Facebook completely destroyed MySpace. Isn't it possible that somebody will come along and do the same to Facebook?
I don't know. I have no reason to believe that's going to happen because of how big Facebook has gotten. When you compare the two, MySpace said
it had barely got a toe in. Yeah.
Right.
And it was never the backbone of the internet in an entire country.
Right.
Facebook
it's a
is
bunch
in
of
India.
Services.
Yeah.
I mean, the scale is just completely different now. MySpace was so early on, it was really part of defining what social media actually was.
Yeah.
So it was almost inevitable that a MySpace that early on. I mean, I suppose it could have been we were there first, so therefore we reign supreme forever. But it's almost like they were the training grounds for the rest of the social networks that came after them. Facebook,
they walked, you know, so Facebook could run. Yeah.
Yes, there we go. I mean, at this
Google
point, Facebook's just resources. So gigantic.
Google had the resources and still couldn't
Google
do
Wave
it.
Or whatever it was.
You know, Plus.
Google,
they had plenty of money, plenty of engineering talent, all of
you
the
know
network
what?
Effect.
It feels like Facebook is much more single-minded. That Google just couldn't, it was so ADD.
Oh, yeah, they are a bit ADD.
That, I think that's exactly it.
Had they put all the same, the business term is put all that wood behind a single arrow, had they put all the energy that they put into all these different things, including April Fool's jokes, into dominating the world, they might have done it. Google Plus was great, but they just couldn't pay attention. Meanwhile, Facebook, laser-like, right?
Yeah.
They know what they want, and they go get it.
Yeah.
At all costs.
Yeah. And I don't think they're at all thrown by what Congress is throwing at them. And maybe
they are. Do you think that the metaverse is going to be a distraction for them?
Let's take a break. That's the next topic of conversation. The metaverse.
Excellent.
Here it comes, or does it? Or is it just Second City Redux? I don't know. Our show today brought to you by Noom. I want to talk about Noom a little bit. Another great product that we use. I started doing it early this year because of the COVID-19. Actually, it was more like 20 for me. Lisa said, I'm going to do this to support you. And now she's surpassed me. She loves Noom. She didn't have as much to lose, but she's always had trouble with that last few pounds. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of people like me who, if I see food, I got to stuff it in my mouth. I'm just kind of a complete unconscious eater. And I think there are people like Lisa who is very, you know, careful and smart about what she eats, but was just having trouble with that last few pounds. And Noom worked for us both because I'm going to say this. I don't know if this is their motto, but because I don't, it's not a diet. Noom is education. Noom is teaching you better habits for better long-term results. You're in it for the long haul. And I just love it. I mean, I've been on every diet ever. I've done them all. And you know that. And I've talked about them before. I don't know if I want to live on kale for the rest of my life. Noom doesn't make that distinction. I'll never forget when I first started on Noom, I had to have a hot dog. I had a hot dog. And I wrote to my coach. You get a personal coach. Tia is my coach. Hi, Tia. I wrote to my coach and said, I had a hot dog. She said, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. Did you log it? Yeah. That's great. In fact, Noom, because you get lessons, it's about 10 minutes a day of lessons, food logging. It's very simple, very easy to do. Every once in a while, they surprise you. They say, time for some fun. Take a day off. I've never had a diet do that. It's awesome. Instead of making you feel guilt, regret, feeling bad about yourself, feeling thwarted, Noom empowers you to keep going. If there's a single secret to Noom, that's it. There aren't strict rules. Noom gives you knowledge so that you understand what you're doing. You understand. I'm a fog eater. I come home, I stuff my mouth. I don't even think about what I'm eating. I don't even taste it. One of the things, the great lesson we did with Noom, Lisa and I both still do this, we love it, is we turn off the TV, we put away the phones, we put away any distractions, and we take one bite, put down our forks, and really taste the food. And I can't tell you what a difference that makes. It all comes from Noom. They use a cognitive behavioral approach. You focus on the why instead of the what to change your relationship with eating. That's it. Your relationship with food has changed. But it's for, and it's important too. Everybody's journey is different. Nobody's perfect. Noom is not about perfection. It's just about progress. And it's about eliminating the pressure, eliminating the good, the bad, fitting yourself to other people's expectations, having the, you know, feeling that, you know, I can't do it. And then with Noom, you find things that work for you and you go, this is it. I can do it. No one wants to be on a strict diet, do two-a-days at the gym, drink these weird teas. No one wants to do that. And that's not Noom. Instead of trying to cram your life into somebody else's idea of health, try Noom. It's a tested psychology-based approach to find a healthier balance that's moldable to your life. It really works. 75% of Noom users finish the program. They go all the way through. And by the way, even when you finish, it stays with you. It's always in your head now. More than 60% of users who really engage with the program keep the weight off for at least a year. I'm just looking at Lisa and I just go, wow, it's amazing. She never thought she'd get that last couple of pounds. You don't need rules to lose weight, just the knowledge and wisdom to empower you to build a smarter, more sustainable habit around food. Noom Weight's cognitive behavioral approach lets you better understand your relationship with food, how to be more mindful of your habits, gives you the knowledge and support you need for a long-lasting change. It's what you want, trust me. This is what you want. With Noom, taking care of your health is empowering, not stress-inducing. Because you know what happens when you get stressed? You eat! That's why diets don't work. They make you, you say, you can't eat that. What are you going to do? I got to eat that. Not with Noom. No need to fear ruining the whole program with one off day. Noom keeps you on track and gets you back on track. All you need is a daily 10-minute check-in. No grueling early mornings, huge chunks out of your day. No fasting. Nothing hard. It's easy. Start building better habits for healthier long-term results. Sign up for your trial right now. Noom is Noom.com/twit. I know you've seen the ads. And I had seen him, actually, Lisa and I had seen him many, many times when we finally decided to do it. I thought, you know, maybe this is right. And I'm so glad we did. Noom, Noom.com/twit. Sign up for a trial. It really, really works. My health's better. All my numbers are better. My doctor says, what are you doing? I said, Noom. So he's happy too, which is good. Thank you, Noom, for your support. It's a sci-fi trope. You put on the headset or you jack in the back of your head You're suddenly in the metaverse, a world that is... And by the way, I have to point out, in every single science fiction novel, whether it's Snow Crash or Cyberpunk or Ready Player One, in every single one of them, when you're jacking in, it's because the real world is so awful, so dystopian, that you don't want to be in it, right?
Is that our future, sir? This world is just going to become an awful, awful place.
Well, I don't think that's the right answer, but maybe it is. I don't know. Are you all, what do you, Ann, are you looking for? You like the VR stuff, right?
Yeah, I dig the VR stuff, but I think the way your future guest host, Mr. Daniel Suarez, put it, in his franchise, the Demon franchise, I think that is something that's way more useful. And that was just the wearing the visors that gave you more of a, not VR, what is it?
The AR. Ones? It was augmented reality. Yes, I loved his vision of AR. Reality. You're right.
You know, I think that's the way to go because you're not totally jacked into something, but you are out right. in the real world and you're able to see different things in the meta space, you know, that may be useful for you out there. Now, granted, there are some security implications with that because I don't want to look at a strange person coming down the street and see their credit history and things like that. But it would be nice that if someone walks up to me and say, hey, are you Ant from Twit? I could look at him and make sure they're not some weirdo.
or you could say, oh, it's you, mashed potato. How are you?
Depends who's asking.
Yeah, that's actually one of the best parts. At the very beginning of Demon, they're walking around and you can see people's reputation score floating mm-hmm. around their head, but you're still in the real world.
You're still in the real
it's
world.
Just additional information. That's mixed reality or augmented reality. That's what apparently they say Apple's working on. Microsoft has the HoloLens, which is kind of a not very satisfactory experience of the same thing.
I just don't like the idea, especially in this time that we're in with the pandemic and people having to be locked in. I don't like the idea of just giving more of a reason to stay locked in and isolated from people. Even if you're in your house, you're now isolating yourself from people within your house because you're in this virtual environment kind of thing. You know, it's I got boys that like to play on their phones or play video games or what have you. And every now and then I have to tell them, put it down. I don't care if you ain't got nothing to say to me. You need to come out of that room and get some air and be around other people. You know, I think it's better for the psyche. You know?
I don't get the feeling that Mark Zuckerberg's vision of the metaverse is augmented reality. It really is more that old Snow Crash where you're in a new...
It definitely looks more VR.
Because he wants you to be transported to a whole different world where he's got control of the advertisements there to
right. Like,
but I mean, genuinely, that's what it is. And what's fascinating about all of this, I feel, is the psychology behind it. Because there is, you know, what Ant's talking about, there is a lot to suggest that human physical touch is something that psychologically we need. And those interactions, in particular, the physical touch interactions, are starved in VR. However, our brains are not very good at the base level of differentiating between real and imagined. And there are a lot of really interesting studies surrounding that I won't go into. But the point is, you can... be taken away to another world where you are communicating with other people and outside of human physical touch, which I do think is very important, you can have those same interactions, experiences, and the psychological benefit of being around other people in this virtual space if your brain, you know, sort of falls into that and you kind of get taken out of yourself. So
it's a big if,
I agree that there are the pros and cons of people maybe having an issue where they do get so sucked into it because it is like real life in some ways and will continue to get better. And I'm certainly more of a proponent of AR over VR myself as well.
But have you ever, I'm sure you guys have, stood on in virtual reality in what looks like a very tall building right on the edge and you're looking down and your heart starts pounding?
It's awesome.
Yeah. It's real.
Such an awesome feeling. Yeah.
Even the kind of weak, you know, VR we have, the low-res VR we have now, is capable of tricking you into feeling like you're really there. imagine, yeah. you know, a few years hence.
There's an embodiment there that you feel in that scenario. Hearing what you were saying, Ant, as far as kind of like the disconnectedness and needing like reality and real touch, especially in, and like you said it as well, Micah, in the last couple of years where we've been so locked down, like I would pose the counterpoint to that, which was that during the true lockdown where like no one was going anywhere, like right, things have eased up now, but when things were really locked down and we were starved for like getting out and doing something, I was thanking my lucky stars that we had a couple of headsets here, because me and my girls could throw on the headsets and we could go to a virtual bowling alley together. And it was like we were bowling together. You know, I just happened to be up in this room, and my other daughter was in our living room, and the other daughter was in the den. But we were all in the same place together. And it really was like we were in a place hanging out together. It was so much fun.
But that's
exactly
the difference,
what we
though.
Needed you, when we couldn't have it.
But that's the difference. You actually came together and said, hey, let's put the headsets on. And then
sure.
when it was done, you took them off and y'all came back together.
No, yeah, no question. Yeah.
Right. Yes, I'm an introvert. I love just chilling by myself, but I do have to make sure I spend time with the family and you know, because it's healthy, you know, it's the right thing to do.
Were you wearing the Quest 2? Is that what you were using, Jason, when you were doing that?
Yeah, the Quest. Actually, it was three different systems: Quest, Quest 2, and the PlayStation VR.
Okay.
So,
and were they all roughly equal in experience, or was there one that you liked better than the other?
I mean, the PlayStation VR is definitely the lowest tier. Like, that's the one I always end up in, and the girls get the Quest.
Dad life.
Really? You sacrifice? Exactly. Is that it?
But yeah, just because the controller mechanism is way different, right? Yeah. It's not nearly as intuitive as it is on the Quest and Quest 2. But then I prefer the Quest 2 just because it's a higher resolution. It's maybe a little less comfortable. But yeah, they're both pretty similar in my opinion.
So I got to be a part of Horizon Worlds while it was still in invite-only stage and try that out, which is Facebook's like first take on the metaverse. And it was a really fascinating experience building my own little world, but then also going to this shared space. There was a VC over in the corner talking with somebody else about investments that he just made. And I was like, I'm staying very far away from that. That sounds really boring. But there was this
sounds like Clubhouse.
Person. Right? Wow. There's a young person going around saying hi to everybody. But then a Facebook person, like community, you know, guru or whatever, came into the space, and she was walking around and was telling people about some different kind of hidden Easter eggs. And so you saw all of these people kind of having this delightful moment of learning new ways to interact and make sparkles appear above your head and all sorts of stuff. And I was kind of listening in a little bit from a distance while I was playing with a paper airplane game, standing atop and kind of looking down on this whole group of people. And I was able to do this all from my
office. Sounds like a real party.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. It was really like a real party. It was around Halloween too. So this one world would take you to different worlds that people built where there were Halloween themed things. So there was like a haunted house and some games where you tried to get rid of ghosts and different people could play. And there was a huge scoreboard in the background where everybody could see their score and compete against one another. And I didn't have to move from a spot, which was a pretty cool thing to be able to do again while you're in lockdown. So I do see some value to this. I think the big thing is adoption and whether or not that is going to take place.
I'm actually not worried about adoption because I look at how people have taken to VR and they really love it. I mean, there's a certain percentage of people who will always be nauseated by it. I think I'm in that group.
Yeah.
But I struggle with the latency.
Maybe it'll get better and it won't be an issue. What you just described sounds pretty cool, Micah. I guess the question is, do we have to be in meet space to relate to one another, or can we really have a genuine experience with one another in a virtual space? Do you think we can?
Right. I think that there's, so I'll tell you, I think two things. One, this is still, in the way that it's working now, is relatively new. And so there will be a number of studies that go out. But the studies that we have seen, I think in Psychology Today, even, there was a piece about people going through therapy and the empathy that can take place in a virtual space. But I will say, I joined Horizon Worlds, and I've got this issue of everywhere I play, everywhere I create an online persona, I always use my name, at Micah Sargent, on everything. And in Horizon Worlds, after I'd already created my character, my avatar, or whatever, I thought, oh man, I feel kind of bare and open to the world. I kind of wish I would have just come up with a different username as I'm walking around and my name's above my head. And that was a weird experience for me because I'm on camera a lot of the time. I talk to people, talk in front of people.
Fascinating.
And so to feel enough exposed in this virtual space was kind of an interesting thing that I was not expecting to feel. And it kind of changed how I interacted with it. And I had to get comfortable turning off my mute switch for the microphone and start to participate in the conversations that were taking place around me. So yeah, I do think that we can, I want to go with the word supplement. I don't want to go with replace, but supplement some of those interactions we have elsewhere. Because we're trying to do that now just in text-based and in video conversations. And so the closer we can get to the real thing, the more our brains can sort of give way with that suspension of disbelief. And I think the more then it will work.
I definitely agree with supplementing it. Because I think about every dadgum Wednesday at about 2:30 p.m. Pacific time when I get to sit down virtually with you and Mrs. Higginbotham and Mr. Jarvis, and just how much that means to me, the conversations we have every week. Yes, I'm working, but it is I freaking love just sitting with you folks for those 2 hours, and I think that's something that most people would enjoy. If they had that type of connection with people, they can't necessarily go out and hang out at the bar or anything like that. But if you can fire decent audio and decent camera and be able to see each other and just have some meaningful conversation, that goes a long way in supplementing just the regular in-person experience, in my opinion.
I mean, John just pointed out we are actually in the metaverse, the four of us. We're not connected.
Right.
We're not in the same room. We're not in meet space. And people who are watching us, I think at this point, probably feel like they're around the table with us conversing. Here's the thing I really don't want to have happen. I think there's a lot of potential in it. It'll be very exciting. And I think that the things that have been most exciting about technology have been things that have been created by individual creators working in garages, working independently. I really don't want Mark Zuckerberg's vision of what this is to become the dominant vision. That is not ground up. That is from top down. I think Mark's a creep, and I don't think his vision of what the metaverse is, I mean, I find his ideas creepy. And I don't want him to, but is this technologically so hard that it isn't going to happen kind of naturally, as the internet happened? It's going to happen, only from a big corporation.
If you ask Intel will tell you that there's no way we're going to get this in the next 5-10 years. There was a blog post by an Intel exec research scientist who said, look, this is going to take 1,000 times the compute power we have right now. Unfortunately, the blog post ended up kind of being an advertisement because at the end they're like, but we can do things like machine learning and artificial intelligence, which Intel chips can do to get us sort of the way there. But the larger argument was that the thing that Facebook is trying to say is coming next year or the year after is quite a ways away.
I agree with you. And if you look at it, it's very cartoony. But let's not forget, what's the order of magnitude between the first IBM PC running at 4 megahertz and today's iPhone running, we've got billions of transistors in our pockets running at many gigahertz. That's more than 1,000. So I don't think saying, 1,000 times more power is really a deterrent. You're right. It's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen tomorrow. Some form of it might, like what we're experiencing right now.
Right. Baby steps.
But maybe 10 years from now, or maybe 20 years from now, we'll certainly have that capability. The only question is, I really don't want it to come from I don't want it to come top down. I think it needs to be organically developed. I don't want one company to run it.
That was to say terrible. It wouldn't be something that the open source community jumps on and
oh, I'm sure they are
as well.
I mean, people like Jaron Lanier, he's been working on this for 20 years himself, one of the very first proponents of virtual reality. So I think that there is a movement that way. I just don't want it to come from, I don't want Mark Zuckerberg to own the metaverse. That to me is a nightmare scenario.
It's worth pointing out that Facebook did actually say, or Meta did actually say, we don't want to own the metaverse.
Sure.
But exactly. Then you name your company Meta. So really, I don't know if I believe that.
I'd like to see. I would love to. I mean, look what the internet has done. And I don't think we would have known 20 or 30 years ago what the internet was going to be today. And it certainly made a huge difference in our lives and everything we experience. I think that VR, AR, mixed reality, I think it's all going to be part of something, is absolutely going to happen. It might take 10, 20 years. But just like 20 years ago, you saw the beginnings of the internet. I think now we're seeing the beginnings of it. I think the internet succeeded because it was a lot of little people. It eventually, became dominated by a handful of companies to its disadvantage, to its detriment. But maybe we can do something a little better this time with AR and VR. I'm hoping.
1,000 blockchain enthusiasts just said, that's how we solve it.
That's Web3. I think next year will be the year of Web3. We'll be talking a lot about that. We talked a lot about NFTs this year. And you even minted some NFTs.
What? Yeah.
How's that going for you?
I have a love-hate relationship with NFTs. I totally dig the idea of creative artists being able to get money for their works another way. But at the same time, it is such a ripoff in some instances when it comes to minting things and gas fees. And then there's the whole aspect of people just freaking right click and downloading whatever digital asset that you have out there anyway, if it's like an image or what have you, and you totally lose out on that. But I do like that people want to collect things like Doctor was saying before, you like baseball cards. People wanted to collect baseball cards, and they invested in that. They paid their however many bucks per package of baseball card. And I liked that a creative artist could earn revenues from that and make a living off of it. But what I don't like is just how difficult and expensive it could be when you're dealing with gas fees and stuff like that. So you can try different blockchains, but boy, we are so early in this game, and you start talking about wallets to people, and they assume you're talking about PayPal. And no, I'm not talking about PayPal. I'm talking about an actual crypto wallet. Well, how do I create a crypto wallet? Okay, you go to this website. Well, how can I get money into that crypto wallet? Well, you need to make sure you convert your USD to something like ETH or BTC or do what? I'm gone. You know, and so I've already lost that sale, you know.
It feels like right now this is ripe territory for scammers and speculators. Yeah. But maybe something will come of this down the road. I think blockchain technology is interesting. I just think that the people who have latched onto it are not necessarily...
I know two people that have made some good money this past year in NFTs. And I am so happy for them and proud of them.
Yeah.
You know, but it was definitely lightning in a bottle, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question, Ant?
Sure.
You know people who have made a good amount of money on NFTs. Do they already have an audience? Like, because I think the general
one of them has a large audience. One of them has a very large audience. And the other one, his audience was not much bigger than mine. You know, he's super talented.
Still boom.
But
yeah. It's interesting to me. Like, I haven't investigated NFTs on whether like it's even worth, you know, spending my own time with it. You know, I'm not making image art, I'm making music, but
which
I
is still NFTable.
Totally NFTable, right? But I guess anything is really NFTable. But there is a lot of interest in this from the creator space, just from the perspective of, hey, great, here's a possible potential way for us to actually be paid what we feel like we are
worth, because they don't want to have to deal with the middleman, especially the way you being a musician. The music industry was just killing musicians.
Yeah, completely.
The years. It's not even cool. And this is something where they can totally, you know, insulate themselves from that type of robbery and
but are gas fees the new middleman?
That's what it's starting to look like to me.
Yeah, it really feels that way.
And then there's no real, you can't really predict it. There was one point, you know, several weeks ago, I had some altcoins out there, not Bitcoin, just some regular altcoins. And they grew quite nicely. And I was like, well, this is a fun ride. I'm going to take my money and run kind of thing. But, man, I think I ended up losing 40, 45% in gas fees.
Oh, just can you explain really? Or someone explain what gas fees are? If there's anybody out there listening who's going, what is a gas fee?
It's basically the transaction fees on getting money to one wallet and away from another wallet, you know?
Yeah. And it ends up being ridiculously expensive.
Yeah. Like, and it changes on the hour. One minute it's really high. The next minute it's low. It's ridiculous. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah.
One of the things I asked you guys to do before we started the show is to come up with your stories of the year. I'm curious. Let's start with you, Jason Howell. What was in your sphere? Of course, I host All About Android, so I'm going to guess it has something to do with that.
Yeah.
In your sphere,
it's shocking.
What was the big story? What's the story big you surprise. Think we should pay attention to?
I mean, so I guess each and every year following Android, I could possibly say the latest version of Android. But this year, I feel like it was especially important. In the past, however many years, the new major version of Android had felt. I mean, significant, I suppose, enough for another number increment or whatever. But still, at the onset, looking at it. Kind of hard to come up with, like, okay, well, what's different here? Oh, it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I felt like Android 12, at least, you know, you could argue whether you like it or not, but at least this time Google said, hey, let's make a big change to the OS and really get in there and kind of shake things up a little bit. I just kind of felt like Google had been kind of getting a little sleepy. I don't want to say lazy because they've definitely done work behind the scenes, but the OS just kind of needed some extra attention. And I actually like Android 12. I know that at least you, and you've said that you aren't a huge fan of Android 12. I like the changes that they made with Material U. I really like a lot of the privacy. Focused changes, seeing the little chip that tells me when my camera or my microphone is live, being able to have approximate location information instead of very specific, here's where you are. You can tell an app, I'm approximately in this large geographic area. A number of other changes. It's not record shattering by any stretch, but at least it shows that Google is still putting some time in to come up with something different and unique, and I appreciated that.
I can't think of another Android version that has been so controversial. On the one hand,
Jelly Bean.
Really, was Jelly Bean? Yeah, really? Jelly Bean was the one for tablets, though. That was...
No, not Jelly Bean, Honeycomb. Sorry.
Honeycomb.
Okay. Honeycomb for sure.
It was a long time ago. But I have to say, this one, there are people who say it's the, you know, and the pick going, I have to say, the to me, Android 12 and the Pixel 6 kind of go together.
They do.
Because you can't get it anywhere else. But I've seen people say the Pixel 6 and Android 12, that's the phone of the year, the best phone out there. I've also seen people, and it's not alone by any means, say this is a nightmare. This is the most buggy version of Android ever. It's a real hit or miss proposition. I myself have some issues.
At first, I was thinking, okay, it's the developers with the apps that I like to use. You know, they haven't quite updated it. And, you know, I get that. That happens. But then when I started noticing core functionality of the OS just puking on me, it's not the developers. It's Google and its development team that did a craptastic job of quality assurance testing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there are aspects of the OS that when I've encountered them kind of make you feel like, okay, maybe this was kind of rushed to hit a timeline or whatever. But
I have no problem with the UI.
I feel like you could say that about all of their releases. That's just kind of how Google works, right? It's like, well, let's put it out the way we have it. And then you find out after the fact that it's never perfect. It's literally never perfect coming from Google. I guess I'm used to it.
Yeah.
KitKat was okay, right? KitKat was okay.
This
right?
is such ancient history, though. Honeycomb and KitKat. That was so long ago.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't. I mean, of course, there have been problems, but I thought Android 11 was pretty reliable. Android 10's been pretty good. 12 seems like there's issues, and there's some protracted and long term issues, and then other people are saying, oh no, man, this is the best thing ever. So I'm actually very puzzled. I think you could make an argument looking at what we've talked about today with Microsoft and Google and Apple. We'll get to the Apple. That maybe software is just starting to fall apart.
I kept thinking, all right, maybe
it's been around
me.
Too long.
Yeah. I'm like, maybe it's me. Maybe it's the phone. So I've done the factory reset and wiping of the phone and all of that stuff.
You might have just gotten a bad phone. It is completely possible.
No.
What's your story of the year, Ant?
Well, it's all about ransomware, yeah. And they hit pretty daggum close to home. First was the Colonial Pipeline, and them getting hit with a ransomware attack back in May, I believe it was this year.
Yeah, this was the one that really put Reval on not only on the map but also put them in the sights in the yes. target zone.
When that went down, and to hear the story about, you know, it's just a lack of security on Colonial's behalf.
That one was DarkSide. I apologize. That wasn't real.
It stung. But at the same time, when that happened, I was on vacation and gone back to visit my mother in Carolina. And all of a sudden, we couldn't get any gasoline.
When that pipeline went down, that was the one where you heard all the stories about people hoarding gasoline in long lines. And
I go to get gasoline.
Bags of gas.
Yeah,
plastic bags, really? I go to get gasoline one day, and this was like my second day there on vacation. And I'm like, why is there a line in the middle of nowhere, South Carolina, for this petroleum? And sure enough, man, I picked up my phone and saw the news about the ransomware, and they had to shut down the pipeline because of this, and just the whole trickle down effect. So I spent a lot of my time, I was able to go out and do one shoot, but I spent a lot of my time just sort of sitting on the couch because didn't have much gasoline. It just stunk. But then the next story is another ransomware attack with Sinclair Broadcasting. And that one hit close to home because my mom is a Sinclair employee. Now, granted, she's not going to tell me everything that went down, but she had her concerns like all the employees there. And the people that don't know about Sinclair, it's a television broadcast network. And when this happened on the weekend during football games. So that's when a lot of these networks make most of their money is during football season and the ads during football season. And things just sort of went to crap that weekend, and they were down for quite a while. I believe I saw a news story that they were down at least until November of this year. The attack happened in October, but I believe they were down until November of this year because of that, which made me question, how are their backups? What happened? You know, what else is going on with this? How are they down for a month after a ransomware attack?
Yeah, and of course, Colonial paid the ransom. That's another
never
trend
heard word on Sinclair, because I looked that up to see if Sinclair paid. I never heard word if they paid.
I have a feeling that's one of the trends we can talk about in 2021, too, is just giving up, saying, all right, take your money. In this case, the FBI got some of that money back. I don't know if it got back to Colonial or if the FBI kept it, but they got some of that money back. And it was an infrastructure attack, and I think those infrastructure attacks are what really got our government to sit up, take notice, and to do something about ransomware. So, in a way, that was a turning point.
Don't insurance companies now offer ransomware protection?
They did. I don't know if they still do.
You know, and I thought about this because if they're offering this protection, then
pay
the company that gets
pay.
The company. Yeah, they're just like whatever.
Doesn't cost me anything.
Happen.
Yeah, we talked. This was at the beginning of the year. Maybe it was the end of last year. I think maybe in the end of last year. Thanks to the pandemic, a lot of schools were kind of abandoned, and schools and city governments ended up getting really attacked. And it turned out that one of the reasons they were so popular is because they often did pay because they had insurance. And ransomware authors and their affiliates are not dumb. They're going after.
It's like, what's the incentive on being more secure in my enterprise IT or small business IT?
Yeah, if I got insurance.
Yeah. Right. And then what's the incentive for the bad guys to say, oh, they got insurance. They're going to pay.
They're
so
gonna
I'm
pay.
Just going to keep coming harder and harder at it. You know?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Micah, what was your story of the year?
My story of the year, so it's kind of a jumping off point because in 2020, this was actually when the Apple versus Epic case kicked off. So if you are not aware, the Apple versus Epic case was this interesting start to a conversation where Epic Games, which makes Fortnite, released an update to its app in the App Store, and nothing happened at that point. But then it made an update on the server side that pushed an update to the game, essentially, that let people sort of circumvent the App Store's, Apple's App Store in-app purchase system to be able to get credits for the game that they were playing. And then they publicized it on purpose. Apple shut them down, and then Epic Games put out this whole press release and this video where they did a parody of an original video from Apple, original advertisement from Apple. And then things went from there. Essentially, Epic Games said, hey, look, we think that the App Store is a monopoly and that we should be able to have our own payment system within the App Store without having to pay Apple's commission, et cetera, et cetera. And then that turned into, for me especially, I've never paid so much attention to antitrust and sort of fairness rules, so to speak, when it comes to tech companies. I had not personally considered the App Store and Apple's commission as much as I did this past year. I had not considered Google's take on this and their commission. I had not considered and paid attention to all of the companies who were making changes. Chris Cappicello was just on Windows Weekly for the end of the year episode, and he was talking about something that he considered to be one of Microsoft's hidden gems, which was clearly a kind of point at the other companies talking about App Store fairness, where in the Microsoft Store, the Windows Store, the commissions are, you know, different, and that they
anybody
are
can have a store, and they don't charge
anyone
very
can have
much.
A store.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And so there's just a lot of attention being paid to that this year. That I think it hasn't seeped as much into the general milieu as the supply chain has. It's not as much of a meme or a hashtag, but App Store fairness and that kind of conversation about what developers deserve and sort of the examination of Epic's handling. And now this ongoing, the court case is continuing to be sort of pushed back and pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. All of that regulation of the government kind of paying attention now to these app stores and Apple and Google's place in that, I think has been a really fascinating thing to watch this year. And I think it's going to continue on for several years.
Yeah, in a way, even though Epic did lose this case in every respect, even down to the judge's requirement that Apple open its app store being overturned by the Ninth District just last week, Epic got nothing tactically from the suit. But you're right. From a point of view of mindshare, they kind of did win a victory. And Apple even has had to kind of cave and give in a little bit. And give
rethink some stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yep. There's been a few changes that have come by that Apple, you know, of course, says, oh, you know, this is something we were going to do.
Oh, we were going to do this anyway.
Yeah, it's very clear that it's in response to the EU and in response to sort of these, yeah, it's getting ahead of those things, these preemptive decisions that are very clearly. So, yeah, they didn't win the war, but they certainly got into the history books, as it were.
Very good point. I actually hadn't thought about that, but we wouldn't be having these conversations except for Epic's lawsuit. Three good stories. When we come back, the silliest stories of 2021, and this was hard to pick. Believe it or not, there were quite a few. We'll get to that in just a bit as we wrap up our holiday special. So nice. I'm so glad you guys could get together. It's funny. I completely forgotten. We're not. We were hoping we could all be in the same room because of Omicron. We can't. We're not. But it does. This is virtual reality, isn't it? It feels like
sure
we're sitting
is.
Around the table and having a nice conversation. It's kind of
sure is.
Kind of interesting.
We've got our holograms around the table.
Yeah.
It's as if we're truly there.
You're practically
sitting at the
here.
Table with you.
Now go get some booze and we'll come back and get silly in just a little bit. Our show today brought to you by userway.org. Accessibility is so important. It's the law in the United States. The Americans with Disabilities Act requires that any public entity be accessible, and that includes every single website. But it's also important because there are a large number of people who can't use your website, who can't shop in your store, who can't use your shopping cart. And I think you want them to be able to. It's a right thing to do. It's good for business. It's also the law. Now, the problem is, and I'm very sympathetic, running quite a few websites myself, you'll look at that and go, now what do I have to do? Do I have to hire developers? How much time is this going to take? How much is it going to cost? Let me introduce you to UserWay. UserWay.org. It's amazing. They are doing so much to make the web accessible. They have an incredible AI-powered solution that tirelessly enforces the hundreds of web content accessibility guidelines, the WCAG guidelines. And they do it, from your point of view, it's very simple. With one line of JavaScript, they can achieve more than an entire team of developers. They also do it very, very, very affordably. Making your website accessible can be overwhelming, I understand. But UserWay's solution makes it simple, it's easy, it's cost-effective. First thing to do, go to userway.org/twit, run their scanning tool, see if you have issues. You probably do. And you probably want to fix them. I know you do. Well, let me tell you, UserWay is used by more than a million websites, some of the biggest websites in the world. Coca-Cola, Disney uses UserWay, eBay, FedEx, UNICEF, Walmart, many leading brands, because it's an easy and a very effective way to make your site accessible. Operating an accessible, compliant website just makes business sense. Millions of people will need UserWay just to purchase your products. And rest assured, as you grow, UserWay is there for you. I mean, if they can handle Disney, they can handle sites of any size. UserWay will, first thing they'll do, they use their computer vision to generate alt tags. All the images in your site have to have text-based descriptions. And they can do that quickly and easily. They give you a facility so that you can enhance them if you want. Makes it very easy. So you could just go boom, 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 and add to those text descriptions. But the text descriptions they do, they're remarkable. They're really, really good, thanks to AI. It'll fix complex nav menus, which is often a very big problem for blind users. Their screen readers, they just get lost on those hamburger menus. UserWay ensures all your pop-ups are accessible, your forms, your shopping cart. It'll fix vague link violations, fixes any broken links, make sure your colors are all accessible without changing your brand colors, by the way. There's an accessibility layer on all browsers. So people come to your browser and just use the front page. If they can see, they just use the front page. But if somebody comes there and they have disability software, screen readers or such running, it'll use the accessibility layer. And it does two things. First of all, it shows the software the stuff they need so that they can generate a speech or whatever it is to make that site accessible. But they also make it customizable. And that's important, too, because everybody's different. There's no one disabled person. There's all kinds of disabilities. So it's important that you also be flexible, and UserWay does it. Completely platform agnostic. WordPress, Shopify, Wix, it's easy to add UserWay. AEM, Sitecore, same thing with SharePoint. Because it's one line of JavaScript, pretty much any website, you just add that line and it's done. UserWay integrates seamlessly with everything. It lets your business meet its compliance goals. It improves the experience for users. Just ask Susan Bennett, the voice of Siri, what she thinks of UserWay.
Hi, I'm Susan Bennett, the original voice of Siri. You won't hear me say something like this too often. I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're looking for. But every day, that's what the internet is like for millions of people with disabilities. UserWay fixes all of that with just one line of code.
UserWay can make your website, any website, fully accessible, ADA compliant. With UserWay, everyone who visits your site can browse seamlessly, can customize it to fit their needs. It's a great way to showcase your brand's commitment to millions of people with disabilities. It's just the right thing to do. Go to userway.org/twit. It's already very affordable. I mean, it's very inexpensive, but we're going to give you an additional 30% off just because you saw it here. UserWay's AI-powered accessibility solution, 30% off when you go to userway.org/twit. UserWay, making the internet accessible for everyone. UserWay, UserWay.org/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech, and for all of our blind listeners and disabled listeners who really appreciate making that stuff accessible. So last tweet we talked about scientists taking a tardigrade, which is every kindergartner's favorite animal. It's a microscopic animal, lives in moss. They call them a water bear because it looks like a bear. It's got little claws. It's really the cutest thing. But they're also tough. They've been put in space for 2 weeks and survived. They've been frozen. They've been shot out of a gun and survived. So this gave me the inspiration for this whole segment because scientists in Singapore have taken a tardigrade, this little microscopic water bear, and it's the first multicellular organism to be put inside a quantum entanglement. I don't even know what it means. They put it on a qubit from a quantum computer. It was in a quantum entanglement. And so that made me think, you know, I bet there's some other stories from the year that...
Is that 5 nanometers or what?
Oh, it's tiny. Let me see. I get it. What's the process? Oh, my God. He's making geek jokes now. Oh, no.
I tried to pull a Kevin. I'm sorry.
These are so cute. Look at the tardigrades. They're so cute. Little water
cute
bears.
And creepy. I mean, there's just something creepy about those claw hands.
Yeah.
The, like, pucker face is kind of unsettling to me.
It is a little. It looks a little bit like a sci-fi alien.
It really does.
And maybe
does.
They are aliens. I mean, they could have floated through space to get here.
These things 20 times the size of us are going to be the things that land on Earth and we reach our end.
Well, I didn't know this, but Tim Stevens yesterday, I'm sorry, last twit, last Sunday, said that that tardigrades power the Discovery and Starship.
Trek. That's a spoiler, but I was going to mention it and I was like, no, that's a spoiler.
It's a spoiler?
Yeah.
If you don't know that already, which I don't.
That's true.
Now you do.
Actually, every single tardigrade in existence was created the moment that they put it in a quantum entanglement. All the ones from the beginning of history to now.
All of them
were actually created
at the same time.
At that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all existed from that point past and forward.
You want to see a video of a tardigrade mating?
Not particularly.
No, not really, sir. Okay.
Never mind.
Are you sure it wasn't defecating?
I don't know what it was doing. It says it was mating. That's just... This was the year, I think, began the supply chain crisis. The Ever Given container ship got stuck in the Suez Canal.
That was hilariously...
That was hysterical.
You know what that did? When that was all going down, that really took me back to like the old days of Twitter when some random event would happen that everybody was watching like patiently every day, like checking in on the status. Like I got those feels around the Ever Given container.
There were a lot of memes about Ever Given.
Still are.
Yeah. There still are. It took 106 days to get it out of the canal. They were able to open it up to traffic in a few, but it took 106 days to get it out. And it's a big container ship. It had a lot of containers on that sucker.
Yeah.
So the evergreen.
Whatever happened to the person in charge? Whatever happened?
Oh, where are they now sort of situation?
Where are they now? Is there any fallout about this
incident? Still stuck in the Suez Canal. They didn't let them leave.
I remember it because that was right around when I started playing Valheim, which is, for me, the story of the year.
You running around
600 hours playing a stupid video game. But my character is named Evergiven.
Oh, that's amazing.
I guess because I was stuck in Valheim. I don't know. April Fool's. We'll do this chronologically. So that was March. April Fool's. VW puts out a press release a few days early saying they're going to rename the company Volkswagen because they're going to go all electric. And then when journalists call to say, is this an April Fool's joke? They say no, except it was.
It was
their stock rate. They had a stock increase because of the decision, and so then that called in what the FTC going. SEC, now we have to investigate this SEC, April Fool's yeah. prank because you may have tampered with the marketplace.
Yeah.
And they also lost a bunch of journalists' trust and respect in the process. So,
yeah,
you know, not a good idea.
You can do an April Fool's joke, but don't lie to the press when they ask you, is this an April Fool's joke? Just say, yes, it is. Aren't we clever?
Just say no comment. That's fine.
We had a lot of fun playing this. It's been disabled. I can't play it. The Italian video.
Yeah, probably. I didn't check.
The Italian sportscaster. Who couldn't, during the Olympics, couldn't log into the laptop in the booth. So on mic, apparently unwittingly on mic, he asks somebody in the booth, what's the password for this thing? And the guy shouts the password, which is terrible.
Oh, yeah, I remember
it's
that.
It's the booth number. And then he says, but that's a terrible password. But security through obscurity, it was all in Italian. So
obscure to us anyway.
I will translate. It was during the broadcast of the Turkey Chili volleyball game. Turkey Chili, that sounds like something good.
I do like Turkey Chili.
the Turkey China volleyball
and
game.
There goes our Turkish and Chilean fan base.
He says, and we had, I think Carolina Milanese was on the show during this, so she was translating. Do you know the password for the computer in this commentator booth? He asked. When he was told that it's based on the booth number, he said, Italian profanity. It was too hard to call the password Pippo, Pluto, Topolino. Turns out the password was booth.03, which was, in fact, the name of the booth.
Lord have mercy.
Ma porca miseria, he concluded, using the popular Italian swear word that literally means a pig's misery. Anyway, I don't think any security breaches as a result, but if you're ever in booth 03, now you know the password. Go right ahead.
Can I amend my story of the year?
Yes.
With Miss Milanese speaking Italian on Twit.
I love her.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that great? Oh, she's so great.
Made my liver quiver.
And you didn't want to see tardigrades mating.
I'm out of here.
Astros. Did they release this Amazon's Astro robot, the one with the extending neck?
Oh my god.
This was ridiculous. Did anybody buy this thing?
Somebody ordered it. I thought you did.
No, so I never put my name down for some of the other things, but I never put my name down for that one because I just think it's a foolish product. And also, there were several people who had reportedly worked on it who were like, yeah, no one needs to put this in their house. It will literally drive off of stairwells and try to
kill itself.
Yeah, it throws
itself down the stairs.
Yeah, it will throw itself down the stairs.
Still available by request.
Oh, you can ask for it.
You can request, and it has to be granted.
The idea is it will patrol your home and spy on your kids. And I think later in this video, it discovers a problem in the kitchen. Oh, no, that's how it charges. It goes and it charges, and it sleeps. Look at the little eyes go to sleep. Oh, that's so cute.
Humanized
but
it.
If you hear a noise in the kitchen... No. Now it's just macking on the teenage
daughter.
Scanning.
Oh,
there it goes. Here it is. Here's going. It's running off to the kitchen. My favorite part is when it raises its periscope to look around.
Oh, that's so creepy.
I can turn on the sound. Can I? It's going in. There's a mess in the kitchen. It's raising the periscope, showing you a picture of, and then he presses the alarm button. And the raccoon scampers away.
While grabbing goodies in hand. A cupcake?
With goodies in
hand. Now, by the way, does the robot clean up? No, because it can't.
No.
It can't do anything except bring you a beer if you put a beer in the cup holder on the robot. It'll drive around with it. So,
robots have a long way to go.
This is not Rosie.
No, it's definitely not.
This is nobody's idea of a good idea.
Amen. Wow. That's also the title of this episode.
Yes, exactly. No, I already know the title.
Okay.
Smitten by 2021. Smell the funk. Finally, the story of the guy who accidentally swallowed his AirPods. Turns out he was sleeping in them, rolled over.
Oh, no.
And groggily, he says, I moved my phone off the pillow and removed the wireless AirPod headphone from one ear. The other had fallen out, and I couldn't find it. Still barely awake, I padded to the bathroom for a sip of water, but couldn't swallow properly. A clue. My throat filled with water. A clue, but wouldn't go down. I had to lean over the sink, let the water drain out.
Oh, my goodness. That's scary.
It was bizarre and alarming, but I was so tired. What did he do? He went back to bed.
I'm bad to sleep, like most dudes.
I can't swallow. Right. There's something in my throat, exactly. But I'm going to go back to bed.
That's so frustrating to me.
The wife says, call the doctor, honey. He says, no, I'm fine. I checked again for the missing AirPod in the morning. I used the Find My AirPod function on my phone, which makes the headphones beep, but the batteries were flat, so they didn't beep. Still couldn't swallow. A clue. Anyway, eventually, after another mouthful of water comes straight up, he begins to wonder. It took him like all day. I'd also become aware of a faint pressure in the middle of my chest. He goes to the doctor, and they give him an x-ray, and the doctor's expression when she returned was priceless.
I bet this dude doesn't eat breakfast, right?
Obviously not. Well, I'll be damned, she said. She led me to her workstation, surrounded by my medical staff. On the screen, a cartoon clear image of my ribs parked between them at 45 degrees. The missing AirPod.
You solved the mystery.
Terrifying.
Okay.
A clue.
Even more terrifying. They went to the endoscopy center. The AirPod was retrieved using a tube with a lasso attachment. And he says, it still works fine.
Hopefully doesn't wear them to bed anymore.
The next Apple ad.
Yes.
Talk about durability.
Saves your life. And actually, there is also a post from a woman who swallowed her AirPods. Apparently, it's happening a lot. And accidentally, she says, recorded audio from her stomach.
When I saw this, I'm thinking to myself, I must be a super taster because there's no way something has been in my ears.
You're just not stupid. You're just not stupid. She said, I had a ibuprofen tablet in one hand, my AirPod in the other,
really bad taste
and
or no
I
taste.
Swallowed Oops. The wrong one.
Whoops. Oh, you know, it happens to all of us.
Does it?
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
We all accidentally swallow our AirPods instead of our aspirin.
How many times has that happened? Guys, you're a good crew to hang out with. I have to say thank you so much for spending a little of your holiday time with us. Are you going to... Yes, now, we recorded this. This will air the day after Christmas. For obvious reasons, recorded it beforehand. Tell me a little bit about what each of you are doing. Aunt, what are you doing for Christmas and Boxing Day?
Well, I had to actually shoot the family portrait because I forgot to do that. It started
Send
to be
out a
our
Christmas
new tradition.
Card, you mean?
Well, no, not a Christmas card. It's just we take a family picture. Since moving here, we decided to start a new tradition idea. Of doing the family portrait. Yeah. And I've totally just slipped my mind. So I got to get that done. And otherwise, just going to be sitting on the butt groove of my couch and having whiskey and beer.
Will that be on your Instagram? Or is it private?
I guess I can put it there. I don't think I've ever done put it on Instagram, but I guess I should.
Well, Ant underscore Pruitt. Yeah,
on Instagram.
Yeah, he's a pussycat. He just looks scary in that picture. Do you guys?
I don't look scary in that. Do that I really?
Create dominant. Dominate. That looks pretty scary right there. You don't celebrate just, Kwanzaa or anything like that.
That's my happy face.
That's your happy face. I wouldn't want to meet that in a dark alley. Holy cow.
Did you steal my nunchucks?
Hey, well, on
you
the right
swallow way, my
you
AirPod.
Don't want to meet me in a bright alley either.
I wouldn't want to do that anyway. No, we love you. We love you, Anne. It's really a pleasure having you part of the family. You don't celebrate Kwanzaa or anything like that? Just a traditional
no, sir.
Christmas
just
Eve?
Christmas. Yeah.
Eat
I'm
a
old Southern Christian Baptist guy, so it's all Christmas.
Watch college football.
That's correct, sir.
All the bowl games. You got a week of bowl games ahead.
That is correct.
Is there really a Jimmy Kimmel Bowl or is that?
Yes, it is. And it was a great game, sir.
How does Jimmy Kimmel have a bowl named after him? I don't understand.
It's actually a pretty good story because he is a college sports fan and, you know, LA doesn't necessarily do college like that, even though there's UCLA and USC there. They just don't do college football the way the rest of the country does. And he wanted to bring a bit of a presence. So he was able to get some sponsors to put some stuff together and they came up with the Los Angeles Jimmy Kimmel Bowl, and it ended up being really good. It was Oregon State versus Utah State. Oregon State's from the Pac-12. Utah State's from the Mountain West, I believe. And it was an entertaining game. I thought the Beavs were going to win, but they lost. Good football.
The Jimmy Kimmel
Sorry,
Bowl.
Sorry, I nerded out about football.
That's hysterical. Well, have a wonderful Christmas.
He's a football fan.
Yeah, you know? No, I guess that makes sense. I mean, it's every fan's dream to have a bowl game named after them.
He even had his own little sandwich served there, his special sandwich served there. Oh, wow. With Italian beef and stuff. The winner, they didn't get a trophy. They got a big golden wrestling belt instead.
Sounds like Kimmel.
I mean, he had a lot of fun with it. It was great.
Wrestling belt. Oh, my God.
It was great.
Have a great holiday, Aunt, and
Merry
Christmas to Queen Pruitt and to the boys, the Hardheads.
Thank you.
Sounds like you got a band there. Queen Pruitt and the Hardheads featuring Ant.
That's right. The manager, Ant.
Ant. With Ant on drums.
Coordinator.
At least beating the skins. Jason Howell, you've got two little girls who are very excited about Christmas, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Ooh. They can't wait. You know, the grandparents' big box of gifts was delivered the other day, so now the tree has a bunch more presents underneath. They can hardly, you know, hold themselves from tearing it all open.
Now, I asked Aunt about Kwanzaa. I got to ask you about the white people's holiday, Festivus.
Festivus, for the rest of us.
Do you celebrate? Do you have the feats of strength?
White people's holiday.
No,
I celebrate it all. No. Let's just say no. I celebrate everything. I celebrate life around this time.
The airing of grievances.
There you go.
Yeah, I do the airing of grievances. Festivus is Thursday this week, so or was Thursday because we're on Boxing Day today.
Oh yeah, Boxing Day.
Oh
yeah.
Wow,
yeah. That's Canadian, right?
You know,
I think so. UK.
I think so.
The story apparently is
UK.
It's kind of embarrassing.
Isn't it with banks?
No, it's the lords of the manor would box up all the food from the Christmas feast that they didn't eat and distribute it to the peasants.
Downly peasants and serfs.
Yeah. Hmm. So it's not a day we like to think about, us gotcha. White folk. I prefer to think of Festivus. Nothing to celebrate. Have a great Christmas to you and yours, Jason, and give big hugs to the kids.
Will do.
They are at the perfect age. Perfect age for Christmas. It's just the best
time. Yeah, it's great. We're going to do our Christmas here, keep it low-key, and then a few days later, we're hitting the road to Big Sur, and we're going to be camping for New Year's. We've never done that before. So.
I did that once in my youth. Ooh-wee. It was the coldest night I've ever spent in a tent. It was horrible.
We've got supplies to keep ourselves warm.
Oh, my God. It was Big Sur. I think it was Tassajara. And we hiked up into the hills. Oh, my God. It was the coldest night ever. Anyway, have fun.
Can't wait.
Enjoy.
Oh, you're going to love it. I think I lost a toe. Micah Sargent, your plans for the holidays?
Well, I celebrated my birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday. I forgot. I meant to say happy birthday to you yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And
what'd you do to celebrate? Anything?
There's not a whole lot to do right now. So Sebastian and I just chilled at the house. And
December 19th, if people want to know, that's Micah's birthday next year.
Yeah, for the Wikipedia. There you go.
Put it in the Wikipedia. We're going to celebrate. That's great. How old are you, Micah? Come on, you could tell the truth.
I'm not going to say.
You're a youngin.
I'm not going to tell the internet, but yes, I am on the younger side.
You did
sure.
not turn 40.
I did not turn 40.
That's what the Slack said.
Yeah,
can't trust the Slack.
And I totally fell for it, too. I was like, he's not 40. A really young looking 40. Okay.
Are you going to, do you have a tree? Did you put up a tree, Micah?
No, because we're going to be going to Sebastian's family's house for Christmas. Nice. So it'll be a small little group getting together. And his aunt is like the biggest Christmas fan in the universe. So it'll be a good time.
Christmas in Ukiah.
Yes, indeed. Wow. You remember
that. That'll be fun. Oh, it's pretty up there. Well, I wish you all a wonderful holiday. We are so glad. I love doing the holiday episode just because we can relax and have a little bit of fun. And it's just extra special to have it with our in-house hosts. We have such great hosts. You guys are all wonderful. Next week, we will be doing a best of. That'll be the January 2nd twit and a very special twit January 9th. We looked back this episode on January 9th. We look ahead with a futurist, a science fiction author, and a player to be named later. That should be a lot of fun. A twit is usually, this time we pre-recorded, but usually is every Sunday, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 22:30 UTC. You can watch live at live.twit.tv, chat live at irc.twit.tv. You know who I really owe a big thanks to? This was the year we launched Club Twit. And it has been a huge success. I think we're almost, and is it almost 4,000 members? I think we're nudging close to it. And is our community manager. And I just want to thank each and every one of you who've joined Club Twit. I know we thought the benefit would be, thank you. The benefit would be the ad-free shows. I think it's really the community in Discord. And the fun stuff
hands we put down on Twit Discord.
Yeah, I think the Discord is amazing. So if you'd like to join, we have corporate memberships and individual memberships. Just go to twit.tv/clubtwit. It supports what we do. It's $7 a month, and I think it's well worth it. So thank you very much to all of our brand new club members, because this was the year we launched it. We really, really appreciate it. After the fact, you can always get all of our shows, even this one, on demand at the website, twit.tv. There's a YouTube channel. And, of course, this would be a good New Year resolution. Subscribe to Twit so you get it automatically the minute it's available of a Sunday night, so you can listen to it first thing Monday morning. And if your podcast application allows for reviews, please leave us a 5-star review. Let the world know about the world's longest-running tech podcast. Thanks, everybody. Woo-hoo. I hope you had a great Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Boxing Day. Don't forget to feed the peasants. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Merry Christmas, everybody.